Plaything Live starts now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Monday to you. Oh, man, so much to talk about today. A lot gone on over the weekend. And I must say that I was trying to keep up with all the drama on X, formerly known as Twitter, but it was hard. It was difficult. Happy Monday. I know it doesn't feel like a Monday, does it? It really doesn't. I was driving to work today, and I thought, you know what? Everybody else is off. There was no traffic whatsoever. It might have taken me, at best, I might have gotten to work within 20 minutes. It usually takes me about an hour. So that just tells you how clear 695 is this morning. All right, we're going to obviously talk about the passing of Jimmy Carter. We'll get into that in just a second. But we have to give some praise to Baltimore City. There was a reduction in homicides, and you know what? We'll give them their props, but then we will talk about how I believe we got to this point. I want to hear how you believe that we got to this point. Crime and violence is still up. It's just homicides and non-fatal shootings are down. Also, bird flu vaccines, a big topic over the weekend. We got some audio for you from Face the Nation. Of course, there's many people weighing in, because as soon as you hear the word vaccine nowadays, like, you get triggered, right? It's like, oh, wait a minute, don't you say vaccine, don't you say it. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about how the bird flu has been mutating. I didn't know that was a thing. I guess, you know, this is the first time around that it's done that. Interesting, right? We'll talk about that. Also, another American gone too soon, killed by an illegal immigrant in the state of Georgia. Jimmy Chang's family speaks out. We'll talk about that. And then, of course, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, the fight that began, I guess it was like maybe Thursday of last week. They began fighting about visas, okay, work visas and bringing over immigrant talent. And I thought it was an interesting fight because we as Trump supporters, from my understanding, and maybe I just, you know, am not getting why this is such a discussion. I thought we always looked for the best and brightest. I thought our thing was, you know, we want the best, the most qualified to do the job. We don't want to hire someone based on their race, their gender, or I would say even in this case, where they are from. But there were a lot of people upset that Elon, Vivek, David Bett with Valuetainment, there were a lot of those immigrant employers that are now with the Trump administration basically saying, no, we really want to look for the best and brightest. We want America to be number one, right? America first. But there were so many Trump supporters, like Laura Loomer and others, that were like, well, how dare you look outside of America? That's not putting America first. So it's an interesting discussion. It's definitely a debate. And I want you to weigh in on it. So we'll talk about that around 11 o'clock. And then we've got the Guardian Angels back patrolling the New York City subways. We're going to talk about that, too, because, you know, we've been joined on the show many times by our friends with the Guardian Angels, Strider. And I really hope that they're paying these angels because I know that the angels don't usually ask for pay. But what you have going on in New York City right now, I think we could all agree this is unprecedented. And I don't like the fact that you've got individuals that have to take this on, like Daniel Penny right now, like the Guardian Angels, because, number one, we don't have enough officers to patrol the subways or the streets of New York. Number two, there were all those, you know, people protesting, we don't need the police, defund the police. You know, now they're all like, oh, my gosh, where's our police protection? It's the progressive policies. And I say this all the time. I have friends that are Democrats. I know many of the people that listen to the show are Democrats. I'm not blaming you, but that crazy wing of your party, you got to get rid of it. You really do. You know, there's more people talking about the DNC chair race. Obviously, former Governor Martin O'Malley has thrown his hat in the ring. And a lot of people are talking about what happened and how did Democrats lose so bad here in November. And there's many facts that are the reason that you lost so bad. Okay. It could be because Kamala Harris was a very bad candidate. We know that, you know, she's no longer unburdened on what has been. Right. It was like she always had these word salads. She changed her positions on basically everything to kind of fit this mold. And then we were told for so long that Joe Biden was sharp as a tack. You know, these are just gaffes that he's having when he misspeaks. It was crazy. And so people were like, OK, I'm not stupid. Okay, at this point, I need you to stop lying to me. But of course, you know, you had the press secretary, you had Joe Biden and others around him. I will see even Governor Wes Moore that was lying about his condition. Then all of a sudden, he drops out of the race, right? Like a drop of a dime. And then they insert Kamala. And Democrats, you put yourself in a position where you couldn't insert somebody else. Because the entire time you were talking about win with black women and black women need to be here, black women should be in the White House. You did all of this, right? And then you had to pick, you put yourself in a position where you had to promote the VP, even though what she was tasked to do, right, do something about the southern border, she failed miserably at. But you had no way out at that point. You couldn't say, you know what, we do want to win with black women, but we also want to make sure we have somebody in this position that is very competent and that the people can trust that can do the job. You couldn't say that anymore because your entire focus the last 4 years was promoting people because of their sexual orientation, because of their gender, because of the color of their skin, you know, whether or not they grew up tough, you know, and they overcame. Like, there was all these other things that had nothing to do with the job that they were running for. And so people said, look, I'm not voting for her. We didn't vote her for her last time. She barely polled at 1% when she ran in 2020. But you put yourself in this position that you had no other choice. I will also say on top of this, and this is something that I noticed, and like I said, I'm a Republican for sure. There's some issues where I look at it and I say, Republicans might have gone too far on this one. It's a little extreme. Like, you know, some people still treat the gay community like they're aliens and that they're not part of society. I don't like that. I don't get down with that. I don't think that's cool. Do I want to care or know about your sexual orientation? No, I'm pretty sure you don't know or care about mine. But at the same time, it's like, you know, these are still individuals that I call friends and that I believe are contributing members to society. And I don't know why, you know, we rail hard against them. Now, I will say that when it comes to the gay community, I do believe that you're going to have to drop the T with the LGBT. Okay. And I say that because as we go further, especially with the Trump administration, you're looking at 4 years from now, this whole trans issue is not the same, right? One is not like the others. You know, pushing the drag queen story time, pushing the transition stuff on the kids, it's just not the same. Wanting people, taxpayers, to pay for gender, quote-unquote, affirming care, that part is just, it's way too far above, way too far to the left, I should say. You're going to have to drop the T in LGBT. You're going to have to, whether you like it or not. Okay. But I will say that there was so much focus on that. And then when anybody said, I don't want drag queens reading to kids at story time, or anybody says, I don't want this whole transition, conversation discussed with my child, then what you did is you didn't say, oh, let me take a look at this. Maybe these parents are right about this, because the majority of people are saying on both sides of the aisle that they don't really want their kids to have this trans conversation. But you didn't do that. Democrat Party, you didn't do that. What you decided to do was just call people transphobic or homophobic. So then you flipped the switch and you said, you just don't like this because you have a phobia, right? Remember all the fat shaming stuff before Ozempic came out? And it was like, and I even heard people saying fat phobia. I'm not scared. Right? I'm not scared of a trans person. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of a gay person. I'm not afraid of an obese person. Nobody's afraid of these things. But you did this as if you wanted people in the rest of society to shame those that didn't agree. And once you did that, you lost your base. And so even though there's still Democrats talking today, I don't know how we lost so big. You don't know? You don't know. You have no idea. If the Democrat Party wants to compete in 2028, I'll say this. You're going to have to get back to a time where it was run by people like JFK. Okay? You're going to have to go back. You're going to have to go back to Blue Dog Democrats. You're going to have to go back to supporting those blue-collar workers. If you don't, you can't win. You cannot win. The blue-collar worker was a huge part of your base. You alienated them. You basically said that the problems that they have, the griefs or the grievances that they had, or those things that they were saying, you know, you basically said, well, it didn't matter because Trump is so bad, orange man bad. So you can't pick him. Meanwhile, blue collar workers are like, I can't even take a family vacation this year. This is ridiculous. You guys aren't supporting us at all. Then you wanted to shut down the Keystone Pipeline. You know, you're putting blue-collar workers out of jobs. People like President Trump and others, you know, the Republican Party, they're talking about bringing manufacturing back. You weren't talking about that. It was not a good look. And I'm not saying that I sit here and know everything, but I can tell you that we knocked over 17,000 doors this election cycle, called over 9,000 voters, and guess what? They were all saying the same thing. The left left us. We can't get down with all of this. The ideology just isn't something that I subscribe to. Then, to add to it, you have the attack in Israel, and then what did you do? What did you do? You allowed all these college students, these are grown adults, you allowed all these kids to torment and torture Jewish students on campus in the name of free speech. You made some terrible decisions. But you don't want to look within, some of you. Some of you do, but some of you don't. Some of you want to say, well, I can't believe. Like, and I saw Sunny Houston on The View. I guess the panelists, the ladies were going back and forth. And there were some of them that were saying, you know, not just Alyssa Farah, but the others as well. I think the one young lady, I believe her name is Sarah. Don't quote me. She's the blonde. Well, anyways, she said that she was willing to take a listen to more people that support Trump, because she wants to try to understand why Trump received the popular vote and so much support. Well, as soon as she said that, Sunny Houston jumped down her throat. And with the quick attitude and the neck roll, she said, oh, so now Trump's good for people? Trump's good for the economy? And Sarah, believe it or not, she kind of bucked back at her. I was surprised to see it. Because usually Sunny, when she gets that attitude, the ladies kind of step back and let her, you know, go off, but not this time. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you got this elitist attitude. We know best. We know best for those that are outside our white pearly gates. We know best for those that are living amongst the rest, that are taking the subway to work, that are being bothered by the Jordan Neelys of the world, or even that illegal immigrant that set the woman on fire. And so what you said with your security detail that follows you around like a puppy, what you said is, you know, let's defund the police. We need more social workers. They don't need any of that protection, right? I think it was Congresswoman Cori Bush that had the nerve, the audacity, to get on a morning talk show and said that her private security detail was important because she's an important person. But when it came to police patrolling the streets, she said, well, no, we shouldn't do that because that could lead to police brutality. And so there were many people in Missouri, where she's from, that voted her out, and rightfully so. Rightfully so. I think the progressives that got in, of course, there were a lot from Maryland. And lucky for you, Maryland, like I said before, a lot of government workers here, federal government workers, you know, they're going to vote Democrat. They can afford to vote Democrat, many of them. They don't feel some of the economy blows that I think many people feel, especially like in rural America. Because these government employees, remember, even during COVID, many of them were still obviously getting their paychecks. Because, you know, members of Congress and those in government, they were still getting paid while many others were not. There were many people that were lining up at churches for food boxes, right, or for the food pantries, and those individuals were not. They were still receiving the check because it came from you and I, the taxpayer. And so they didn't want to come out of their elite little bubble and really try to understand those that are hurting, you know, really bad. You really didn't. You know, before we go on, because, again, we are going to talk about Jimmy Carter, but I want to talk to you about an exchange that Council President Zeke Cohen had on X this morning. I commented a little bit on it, but he was going back and forth with one of his constituents. They were talking about the increase in the water prices, and he did respond. He put out a response. So we are going to talk about that. All right. We are going to get into the fact that we lost Jimmy Carter over the weekend, 100 years old. We're going to get into what many are saying about him. I do have a cut to play for you in just a minute from NBC. But I just wanted, we were just chatting about, you know, some of the possible changes the Democrat Party could make to try to appeal, I guess, to the, you know, the average voter. And I just don't know how you do it with the, still that fringe left. And I, like I said, I've got many friends that are Democrats. It's not that, you know, the Democrat Party, you know, can't go back and look at, you know, some of the things that they said in the past 4 years, and, you know, take that turn, because I do believe that they can. But if you go back to when JFK Jr., right? Remember JFK? He was talking more about things that people can relate to, whether it's the economy. If you go back and listen to the debate he had back in 1960 with President Nixon, he talked about putting America first. He talked about the economy. He talked about drilling for oil here in America. He talked about cutting China out of the picture, right? He talked about how they are a communist country and he wants nothing to do with them. If you go back to what he was saying back in the 1960s, Democrats, you'll probably win more seats across the country. But right now, because you're, you know, this whole trans thing, you know, and if you don't agree with the trans thing, then you're a transphobic, you're this, you're that, you know, calling people within your party, you know, names. And this is something that I said even about within the Republican Party. Remember last week we were having a great discussion. I'll have to check the website. Don't worry, we'll get that show up if you want to look back on what we were discussing on Friday. But I will say that, you know, even in the Republican Party, when there were Republicans telling black voters to get off the Democrat plantation, that was awful. That was absolutely ridiculous. Why would you even say such a thing? Right? It's like here you have many people in the Democrat Party, whether they want to admit it or not, they vote based on their emotions. And if you know that about those in that party, and if you're trying to win them over as voters, and you know that you're hitting on their emotions, why would you then say to them, get off of some kind of plantation? When the number one thing that many of those black voters are talking about is systemic racism that started from slavery. And this is what your response is? How stupid can you be? Again, and that was in the Republican Party, right? That's that strong right fringe of the party where you're like, look, guys, you got too far. And I think Democrats can probably get some momentum back in their favor if they do, if you move towards the center and say, okay, you know, not everybody agrees with this agenda to push electric vehicles or electric appliances. You know, some people, look, if they want to go hybrid, if they want to go electric, they'll do it on their own. You know, you don't have to force them, right? And then the COVID vaccine mandates, now a lot of that did happen under the Trump administration. But if you looked anywhere on social media or even in the news, those that supported those mandates were Democrats. You didn't have any Republican Congress members or even those local officials saying, yes, vaccines should be mandated. That's another part I think you lost some people. Well, anyways, not to say that, you know, sure, of course, Republicans, I want us to win all day. But you know what? As a country, especially in the state of Maryland, the fact that you guys have gone so far left, you got to get back to the center. I got Terrell and Owings Mills. Terrell, did you want to weigh in on this?
Yes. I think the main reason why we lost is because the Democrats didn't tell it. You know, I remember listening to Fox News, and Fox News back in 2022, 2023, they were talking about we were going to have a recession. Donald Trump was talking about a depression, and none of that turned out to be true. So Donald Trump just got out there and he lied about everything. And right until today, you're talking about the guy was talking about the economy. You know, the economy was good to me, was good, and it was good to a whole lot of other people too. The stock market was up, unemployment was down. You know, the bottleneck problem was solved. Joe Biden solved a whole lot of things. But
Terrell, I will say that the economy, perhaps those that live on government-assisted programs, perhaps they didn't feel it as much as us that don't. And I think that's another piece of it, right? Because, I mean, you have to admit, Terrell, you lost a lot of blue-collar workers in the Democrat Party.
Well, Kim, you know, we were lied to. You know, the people, right now he's reneging on it. He's telling people that he's not going to be able to bring down prices. He's not going to be able to solve the immigration problem. He's reneging on the immigration problem.
I don't think he said that he can't solve the immigration problem. Well, I appreciate you calling in, Terrell, as always. I hope you have a happy new year. I think the Democrats were lied to, you know, multiple times, but not by Trump, by Biden. I mean, how many times did he tell the young voters that he was going to do something about their student loan debt? He couldn't. The Supreme Court ruled against that. That had nothing to do with Trump. He lied about that. He lied about many things. You know, they had a jobs report number that came out. Turned out it was a lie. They had to go back and correct it. They were hoping to get it in before Election Day. So, you know, of course, they lied about Biden and how he was feeling, how he was doing. Then they had to put Kamala in. I look, if there were liars, I think they were on the left. So we can agree to disagree on that with Terrell. Coming up next, we're going to talk about Jimmy Carter and his legacy here in America. A lot of people weighing in, and we will as well. right. Good morning. Happy Monday. Gosh, it's December 30th. Do you guys have plans for New Year's? Brian, the producer, I'm pretty sure you're going to get fired up, right? Going out, having a great time with the missus? No? No. Well, she's a good cook, and obviously, clearly, probably can probably throw a good party, so. You're going to take a nap? Oh, my gosh. You're going to take a nap, watch football, go back to... You know, kids, if you're listening, if you're young, get out there and party while you can, because once you get our age, man, it's over. We're over it. We're done. You know what I did yesterday? Because Olivia's, you know, she's with her dad in Pennsylvania. They go, it's a tradition every New Year's. So they go for about a week. And you know what I did yesterday? It was so quiet. I went to IKEA. I went to IKEA. I had no makeup on, like literally like yoga pants, like gym clothes and a baseball hat. And I got to walk around IKEA. I was like, wow, that looks great. Oh, wow. Is that what they're doing in kitchens these days? Right. I bought new curtains for the living room and the dining room, matching curtains, put them up. I cleaned. It was great. I was like, wow, all of this peace and quiet. I can't imagine. And so many people probably can relate to this because, and this is why people tell you to have more than one kid. Now I get it. Now I know. To all of those young people that are listening, when people say have more than one, they're absolutely correct on this. Because the only child, right, I've got my one baby girl, the only child will be glued to your hip for a very long time if it's just the only child. So every day, every morning, mommy, look at the slime I made. Look at mommy, look at this, look at that. Right? If there was a sibling, you know, they could talk and discuss with each other and you know, throw slime at each other. But it's... But no, I'm the one and only friend in the house. And so lots of conversations with my 8-year-old. Of course, I love her to pieces, as many of you know. But yes, it does begin to weigh on you when, you know, you hear your name, you know, 108 times a day. It does. I don't know where my manners are because before the break, I did talk about just running down what the council president-elect Zeke Cohen was saying on Twitter this morning. Because his, you know, this is what's interesting about it. Zeke Cohen, you know, he's right now, he is still the city councilman, and he's got that, what is it? The Fells Point area, Canton, Patterson Park, right? You see all the spikes and carjackings. Yeah, that's his district. He doesn't acknowledge it. He won't acknowledge it. He'll filibuster on it and he'll talk about something completely different. It's really bizarre. But, this morning, there was a constituent that was posting about the rise or the increase in the water prices, the water bills in Baltimore City. And it was interesting because, you know, Councilman Zeke Cohen, this all happened like an hour ago. He makes his post it's a picture with him and his beautiful wife. She's so beautiful. They have the cutest kids, by the way. But Zeke Cohen makes his post, says Baltimore's food scene is undefeated. Last night we ate at Alma Cocina. I think that's how you say it. I'm probably saying it wrong. The drinks were playful. We ate oysters, fish, and steak. That's expensive, isn't it? Oysters, fish, and steak. All were boldly flavored, perfectly sauced, and downright delicious. Our city has some of the most creative, scrappy restaurants in America. And I don't know what scrappy means in this. I really don't know. Is that related to food? Scrappy? I didn't know that. Well, anyways, one of his constituents, the handle is D. Betzel. PhD says, for those Baltimoreans that can afford another increase in the water bill hike with DPW, have you tried switching cocktails? And so this person actually did a screenshot of the menu at the restaurant that they were posting about. And the cocktails they were drinking ranged amongst the prices of $17, $16. And I think the cheapest one on here, it says, if you want some sparkling Russell Brut Nature, I guess is what it's called, $13. So these are high drink prices. Again, they had oysters, they had fish, they had steak. It was probably a pretty high bill. And so in the picture, Councilman Zeke Cohen and his wife, they're toasting, and the drink is beautiful. I don't know what they ordered, but it's a gorgeous-looking drink. Well, anyways, a lot of garnishments. It's good. So anyways, the constituent posted that. Zeke Cohen responded and said, you seem confused, lonely, and sad. Good luck. I'm going to continue to promote the culinary scene in our city. That was his response to this, okay? Because there are a lot of people on both sides of the aisle talking about this water increase when it comes to their water bills. So I just simply said, which part is he confused about? Seems pretty spot on. Those drink prices aren't favorable for those worried about their water bill increasing. I said, if you haven't seen it, the Baltimore Banner did a post on the increase on Instagram, and I encourage you to go and read the comments from your liberal constituents. And those are the people that were commenting, because I looked at it, and, you know, you could follow their page, right? And there were many people that supported Kamala. There were people that knocked doors for Kamala. And they were on Instagram saying, whoa, 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 why didn't we know about this water bill increase before Election Day? Because they knew, and they weren't happy about it. And so I said, look, I encourage you to go check Instagram right now because your constituents that are not Republicans are far from being a Republican. They're not happy. Zico responded to me and said, due in large part to our consent decree with the EPA, Mayor Scott needs to raise rates to pay for critical infrastructure. That is not going to dissuade me from promoting small businesses, Baltimore's culinary scene. The argument is illogical and doesn't make sense. That's where, again, see how he kind of, he pivots? Nobody says that you shouldn't promote local businesses. I do it all the time. Nobody said that, Z Cohen. Some people are upset about the water increase. Why can't you address that? You know, saying that there's a consent decree with the EPA, well, how did you get there to begin with? You see, they have all this money for all these pet projects. How much money did they put into Safe Streets? $50 million at first, and then they went further? You got all this money into things that you're just trying out, right? And you're saying, oh, well, let's see if this works. You, and here you are admitting that the infrastructure is in a critical condition, yet you were on city council. Now he's a city council president-elect, right? So he's going to be in charge of BOE. Now that you're there in that position, you know, I hope that you think about these things. And, of course, we had that bipartisan infrastructure bill that passed. I still don't know where that money is. Have you guys found it? I haven't found it. I haven't found it at all. I mean, like, what are you doing here? Well, anyways, that constituent that posted the menu, he responded. He said the, quote unquote, critical infrastructure that all the previous rate increases were supposedly going to fix. I don't think you understand the word illogical. This is from the constituent, right? And that is true because, remember, I would say probably right when Mayor Brandon Scott got in 2020, they were talking about taking care of the infrastructure, but they never did it. And so I still don't understand. Obviously, I'll probably never understand why the constituents gave Mayor Brandon Scott another chance. The crime and violence is up. Yes, the homicide and fatal shooting number is down. You can attribute a lot of that to Ivan Bates, Eric Barron, the fact that they're moving a lot of it across the entire state, right? There's increases in all the surrounding counties. But, you know, when you're looking at the infrastructure in Baltimore City, and you just think about the impact that you had on the bridge collapse, they still did nothing about it. They still didn't acknowledge it, right? They kept begging for more money for rec centers. Didn't make any sense. Well, Zeke Cohen responded to that constituent again. He says, we are an old city. Our pipes, underground water, wastewater, infrastructure is not good. See, again, if you know that, why are you putting money into, like, and I know that Zeke Cohen did himself, the trauma-enforced care or whatever it was. He put millions of dollars into that. You see, this is my gripe, right? This is my gripe with city leaders. You know that there's a problem with all of these things, just as many as your constituents do. But instead of focusing on that, you want to be, quote-unquote, a progressive, and you want to do something that nobody has ever done before. Well, and I point out all the time, no one's ever done some of these stupid ideas because they're stupid ideas. But even with that, it's like that's where they want, like, this claim to fame. They want this grandioso, oh, look what I did when I was in office. Meanwhile, you would go very far in your political career if you would focus on the infrastructure, the economy, the jobs numbers, right? These are why people vote, okay? Those reasons right there. They're not voting for you to come up with some intervention program for kids that really need a baby daddy. That's not why they voted for you. No, they want you to do something about infrastructure. Well, anyways, he went on to say there has been historic neglect of the system. Meanwhile, he's been on city council for years. And like, just keep on, you know, keep it on. He says, I'm glad that we have a DPW director that understands the urgency. That agency has been in awful shape throughout my time on council. But if you go back to his time on council, guys, he never once addressed it. Never once did he address infrastructure. The only time that they were critical of DPW is when Councilman Yitzi Schleifer stepped up and said that they weren't picking up the trash. And then Z. Cohen kind of tagged on to that But when it comes to the infrastructure, the pipes, the water, right? We're talking about the Legionella poisoning and the courthouses. They ignored all of those things. He then goes on to say, improving it with Director Zaid is high priority for me and the council. I just responded with saying, thanks for responding. I hope as City Council President, you will consider changing the status quo and putting infrastructure before pet projects. It doesn't look like he responded to that at all. I think a lot of people will say, no matter which aisle they sit on, that it's time for government to do basic government functions. You were elected to do basic government functions. You weren't elected to do safe streets. You were not elected to do, you know, to put more money into AFRAM, right? The concerts on the summer and having celebrities come to town. Like, how much money did we pay for some of these celebrities to come to town and sing and rap at some of these concerts that Mayor Brandon Scott had? How much money went into that? Could that money have gone into the infrastructure? You bet your bottom dollar. Is that what they did with it? No. Not at all. They didn't do that. So that's the disconnect. Again, Democrats, not telling you how to run your party, but if that's your focus and you've got your Democrat constituents calling you out on social media, there's a problem. There's a major problem. All right. I do want to get into Jimmy Carter, former president that did pass away over the weekend. I thought NBC, I went through a lot of audio. I thought NBC did a great job talking about his legacy, talking about some of the things he did as president. Take a listen.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
He went from being Jimmy who to winning the White House itself, then struggled with crises overseas and a troubled economy at home. A one-term president whose time as ex-president was the longest and among the most active in American history. James Earl Carter Jr., he always went by Jimmy, was born in small-town Plains, Georgia, growing up on a farm without electricity or indoor plumbing. He attended the U.S. Naval Academy, married Rosalind Smith, a friend of his sister's, eventually becoming governor of Georgia.
The time for racial discrimination is over.
A year later, he ran for the White House.
I'd like to announce that I am a candidate for president.
And won. A born-again Christian who promised voters, I will never lie to you.
I, Jimmy Carter, do solemnly swear.
At his best, he scored historic achievements, leading successful peace talks between Egypt and Israel. But closer to home, when the economy tanked, so did Carter's popularity. He seemed to blame Americans themselves.
The erosion of our confidence in the future.
And it got worse. In Iran, scores of Americans were taken hostage. And then came a grueling re-election battle.
I'll bring new hope to America.
Jimmy Carter lost in a landslide. Through it all, Carter was sustained by his faith.
You were faced with some huge crises as president. Did you drop down to your knees and pray?
Often, yes. Often. In fact, I prayed more per day, per hour, while I was president than any other 4 years in my life.
And his defeat marked the beginning of a remarkable post-presidency. He established the Carter Center, committed to advancing human rights and democracy. Carter built houses for the poor, and in 2002 was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. An extraordinary ex-president, proud of his years in the White House.
Kept the peace. We never went to war. We told the truth. Never lied to the American people, never misled the American people. So in general terms, I feel perfectly at ease with my term.
He brought discipline and devotion to everything he did, including his battle with cancer.
Everything's been a blessing for me, so I'm thankful and hopeful.
Despite the diagnosis, he continued building houses alongside Rosalind and marked their 75th wedding anniversary in 2021.
75 years. I can't forgive.
Rosalind died 2 years later, marking the longest presidential marriage in history. In 2024, Carter marked another milestone, his 100th birthday, with an outpouring of gratitude for his life of service. He brought that devotion to everything he did for family and for country until the end.
All right. Again, that was with NBC News. If you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter, you can, 410-WCBM 680, 410-922-6680. Of course, I noted that he did create Habitat for Humanity. I have a couple friends that actually worked for Habitat for Humanity. They did a great job, and they continue to do a good job at building houses for the poor. Obviously, many controversial decisions when it comes to foreign policy. I think nobody can deny that. But today we are remembering the positive. Remember, he lived long enough to vote for Kamala. We saw that. Do you remember that? I still think that was bizarre. I thought that was bizarre that they did that. But I don't put it past him. I'm not shocked. But it was almost like they wanted to get the, you know, an endorsement from him. And I thought that was very odd the way that they did it. But if you heard there in that clip there, again, that's with NBC, Jimmy Carter did talk about how he prayed a lot during his presidency. That's something that you don't hear often from those that are in office, I would say, on the left. That's another thing. Now, people say, okay, what have Democrats done differently? You know, I think not allowing yourself to show that you have that faith in God, you know, not talking about your values, your morals. And I know that you don't do that because you don't want to shame certain individuals and you don't want to put it, you know, your beliefs on others, as you say, but you do it with the LGBT stuff. So I don't understand why you do that. But, you know, you want to say happy holidays because Merry Christmas is only towards, you know, Christians and da, da, da. I think you got to get back away from that. Go back to who you are, right? Because I say Merry Christmas. And then to my Jewish friends, I say happy Hanukkah. Does anybody say, oh, Kim, why did you say Merry Christmas? Nobody says that. And if they did, I don't care. I don't care. I'm Christian. I don't care. You know, I did want to read to you in case you missed it. President Donald Trump did put out a statement on the news. He said, I just heard the news about the passing of President Jimmy Carter. Those of us who have been fortunate to have served as president understand this is a very exclusive club, and only we can relate to the enormous responsibility of leading the greatest nation in history. The challenges Jimmy faced as president came at a pivotal time for our country, and he did everything in his power to improve the lives of all Americans. For that, we all owe him a debt of gratitude. Melania and I are thinking warmly of the Carter family and their loved ones during this difficult time. We urge everyone to keep them in their hearts and prayers, right? Nothing but a classy response from Donald Trump. Now, I'm sure there's still people that will find some kind of problem with what Donald Trump said in that moment. Just because they hate him, right? They really do hate him. All right. Well, coming up next, I want to get your take on Jimmy Carter, whether you want to talk about some of the great things he did, if you want to talk about, you know, the time that he was in office, you know, maybe there are things that you didn't love that he did. We can do that coming up after this break. 410-WCBM-680. That's 410-922-6680. All right. Good morning. We're remembering Jimmy Carter. Died over the weekend. And now with his wife in heaven, 100 years old. Want to get your take on it? Do you want to weigh in? I've got Dave in Crownsville. Dave, you wanted to weigh in?
Yes. Hi, Kim. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
That's Jimmy Carter. I don't think he was a good president, but he was a good man. So we have to give him that, I think.
Yeah.
And I think a couple things. I think his death, the timing of it is going to present a problem for the Biden administration because he's going to be expected to speak publicly, and that's going to be a problem.
Obviously. I didn't even think about that, Dave.
Yeah. The other thing is, I remember I must have read 30 years ago in the New American Magazine, my favorite magazine, conservative magazine, and they explained how the Senate approved the treaty with Panama to give away the canal by one vote. And then Jimmy Carter met with the officials of Panama, and they made changes to that treaty. And those changes were never given back to the Senate to approve. So it's too late now, but at the time it was, from what I read, it was not really a legal treaty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, there's obviously a lot of things that happened, and trust me, I'm getting lots of text messages here that I'm going to read as well. I understand it. But Dave, thank you so much for weighing in. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You know what? It's Monday, and I'm saying weekend. And my days are so confused right now. I've got Don in Baltimore. Don, did you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter?
Sure, absolutely. Here's what I remember. At the time, buying a home, your lowest interest rate was 16%. If you bought furniture to stock in the house, it was at 21%. But what stuck in my mind the most was the fact that with the gas lines, you'd find yourself waking up at 3 a.m., you drive around looking for vehicles that were parked at, you know, pumps, hoping that station would open You'd finally get your gas after you waited in the dark for 4 hours, and then you'd be late for work because the speed limit was down to 50 miles an hour.
Yikes. Yeah, a lot of people weighed in on that as well, Don.
Pardon?
No, I was saying a lot of people also weigh in and have the same comments as well. And I can only imagine. Obviously, I was not born at the time, but I can only imagine how awful it was.
It's nice to know that I'm sharing this misery with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, Don, thank you so much. I appreciate you. Have a great week.
And you do the same. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Another texter here. Keith says, Kim, FYI, Reagan beat Carter in 1980, 489 to 49 electoral votes, 44 to 6 states. He deserved his drubbing, even if it's impolite to point this out now. I served in the Army for the entire 4 years of his presidency, and he was no friend of ours. 8 service members died in the failed hostage rescue mission in April of 1980, after which he did nothing. We were glad to see him go. Yeah, Keith, trust me, a lot of what I've read about Jimmy Carter, awful, right? Awful. And I think the only thing people can really say is that, in some ways he might have had good intentions. But as we talked about on the show plenty of times, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. That really doesn't mean a whole lot to me. But I understand that some people would like, to have like a lighter conversation about it, just for today. But trust me, I'm right there with you. If you think about, your situation and those 8 service members dying, you could also look at what happened in Afghanistan and the 13 U.S. service members dying under President Biden. And the fact that he actually stood up and said, oh, cabal won't fall. We're doing great. We just, we armed their military with weapons and they're fine. Nobody's going to take over. And then literally within days, all hell breaks loose. So trust me, that I see a lot of similarities, and I can only imagine what it's like because I, too, have been suffering these last 4 years. All right, coming up next, we are going to talk about, I guess, some decent news for Baltimore City. There is a reduction in homicides and non-fatal shootings, and we should give them their credit for that. We should not take that credit away. We'll discuss that more coming up next.
Kim Plasek Live starts now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Monday. If you're at work like I am, well, you probably enjoyed that there wasn't much traffic out there. And I did enjoy that. I really did. For the break, we were talking about Jimmy Carter and his passing over the weekend. Died at 100 years old. A lot of people were remembering him online. We did just read President Trump's statement. He did obviously mention that he was very controversial and wasn't everybody's favorite, but he was also trying to say nothing but polite and nice things. I've got Tom and Owings Mills. Tom, you wanted to weigh in on Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, for some reason I've always been able to bond with foreigners, and I once knew an Iranian entrepreneur who had a lot of high contacts with members of the Iranian government when he lived in Iran. At one point in discussion with Jimmy Carter, he leaned towards me and almost in a whisper, and you could tell by the look on his face he was about to tell me something he had never told to any non-Iranian, and that was that Jimmy Carter had arranged the taking of the hostages himself.
Oh,
and
wow.
In the Desert One, as the caller just related, it was so botched to begin with two American helicopters colliding with each other and crashing and burning. And there were strange parallels between the Eisenhower administration and the Carter administration. There was a Democrat in Iran, a Democratic leader named Moshe Dee, and when he was about to move Iran in a Democratic direction, Eisenhower had the CIA take him out and put the Shah of Iran in power, who was a ruthless, brutal dictator. And Jimmy Carter brought the Shah for cancer treatment to America at about the same time the hostages were taken. So he was but he was not an American president.
A lot of people
have our interests in mind.
A lot of people are definitely weighing in and saying the same thing, Tom. So you're saying he didn't rely on the Pentagon or the State Department. He relied on what he wanted to do during the rescue of the hostages?
The one rescue was just botched from beginning to end. There was no chance that that was going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see similarities in what we saw in Afghanistan recently?
Yeah, I would say there are, yes. And, you know, at the very beginning of the Biden administration, Jimmy Carter had a meeting with him right at the very inception of the Biden administration. The two of them got together as if to, you know, get their heads together on something.
Yeah, I wonder what. That's to be a fly on the wall, right? Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for weighing in, and I hope you have a great week.
You too.
Thank you. Happy New Year. I've got Robert in Towson. Robert, did you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter? Hello, Robert. All right, Robert did not hang on. I know a lot of people are weighing in. You know, you guys are killing me. I'm supposed to be trying to be nice in 2025. Remember, that's the one thing that's at the top of my list for my New Year's resolutions is to be nice. Brian just pointed out, it's still 2024. So are you saying I don't have to be nice? Bill in Canesville, did you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter?
Yes. Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
First of all, I was out of the Army for about 3 years when he took over. There were continuous gas lines, continuous, all over the city. Second, I had to buy a car, and cars were about 16 or 17%. Houses were approximately, and I'd like to correct the previous caller, housing was about 18%. And he didn't do anything about it. And in addition, he sent two poorly equipped helicopters into the desert to do a rescue mission, and all eight occupants died.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't land helicopters. That's how bad he cut the military back.
Yeah. Well, Bill, a lot of people are remembering him just the way that you are.
But here it is. We're trying to eulogize somebody to the good who did no good except when he was out of government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing else to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. Hope you have a happy new year. I get it. I mean, I get it. I trust me. I get it, guys. I mean, is he most likely the worst president in history? Yes. Am I going to harp on that today? I'm going to be honest. I'm not. I'm not going to do it. I will say that, of course, like I mentioned, I was not alive during those times, but I've read and I've seen a lot of things that were posted online, whether it's YouTube or what have you. They'll have, you know, you can always see the videos of what happened in some of these instances. And, yeah, it looked like a hot mess. And as people were pointing out, even when it comes to getting gas, it looked awful. And, you know, you had Ronald Reagan that won handedly. And to me, and look, again, I wasn't there. It seemed like there's a lot of similarities between Jimmy Carter's presidency and President Joe Biden's presidency. And when you think about President Trump winning the popular vote, winning all seven swing states, you know, I mean, he barely you know, flinched at all. Like, they didn't come close to taking Trump this election cycle. Yet you had the media, you had all these individuals saying, oh, no, it's going to be a close race. It wasn't. It couldn't be. It couldn't be. And as many people are pointing out, you know, when you're looking at the Democrat Party today, and it really is for, like, the elites, right, those that are so rich that they're not feeling any of the inflation or anything else that many of us are dealing with, or it's for those that, in my view, and this is me talking, my opinion, it's for those that are living on government-assisted programs that don't want to see any of those cut back. And again, there are many great people that use government-assisted programs. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. But what I am saying is that there are a lot of people that do use those programs to their advantage. They manipulate the system. They know exactly how to do it for their gain. And if you're even thinking about the fact that Social Security, all the discussion we're having right now, where Social Security might not be there when I'm, you know, ready to draw from it, it's a crazy thought that we're still putting so much money into these programs for able-bodied Americans that can go and get a job. I mean, I think for the 100th time, I will say, the kids that live in homes, households that receive food stamps, why the hell are they the kids that get free lunch? Their parents have money to shop at the grocery store. thanks to me, the taxpayer. Why are they also getting free lunch at school? And in many cases, free breakfast and after-school snack that looks close or similar to dinner. You know, there's this thing called personal responsibility that we just won't even tap into, and I'm not going to get off on this tangent. But, yes, if I'm looking at what Jimmy Carter did when he was in office, it was a disaster. It was a disaster. And, you know, like President Trump was trying to do, I know his comments kind of pivoted all over the place. You know, me and Melania are praying for his family, things like that. That's the best we could say, okay? I mean, you don't want to be the person that kicks someone as their, you know, right before their funeral. I feel like it's tough to do that, right? Are you really a Christian when you do it? I don't know. I don't think so. That's how I look at it. Raised, you know, a little different, I guess. I got Patrick in Ellicott City. Patrick, did you want to weigh in?
Yes. My father knew of Jimmy Carter and knew him in the 40s and 50s in the Navy. My father was in naval intelligence. And in 1976, when he was running for president, I was 15. And I said to my father, I said, well, isn't it neat that a peanut farmer is running for president? He smiled and looked at me and said, he ain't no peanut farmer.
Oh.
Which means he was a lot more, because he was picked to be in the new nuclear submarine thing, and they weren't picking DEI or quotas.
Yeah.
He was a super smart guy, and I guess the reality is that when he goes back home, politics would be the next natural thing for him to do, because he's like a big hero to that community. And
right.
His problem in office was that he wanted to be the executive branch and have his fingerprints on every single solitary thing. And it was, he just couldn't handle it.
Wow.
And he had bad economic instincts, too. You know, he wanted to be a micromanager.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't have great grounding as far as how to deal with Washington either, but his policies were junk. But that's about it. But he wasn't just a peanut farmer. That guy was a super shrewd, intelligent guy.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate you weighing in. I hope you have a happy new year.
Bye.
Thank you. All right. Well, you know, that was, look, I think that was maybe a great way to sum it up. Real quick, before we get into the reduction of homicides in Baltimore, I did want to note that right now you've got Democrats that are lobbying for President Joe Biden to pardon a certain individual by the name of Charles Littlejohn. Do you remember that name? Do you recall who that is? He's the IRS agent that leaked President Trump's tax returns. That's right. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison. And now you've got many Democrats that are asking Joe Biden to pardon him. Here's what I say about that. You know, be careful what you wish for, Democrats. You're now looking to see how you can get out of the hole here. Charles Littlejohn did something that was horribly illegal. And leaking someone's tax returns, you know, the fact that he only got 5 years, I think is, because how much I'm sure he got time served, that's not a lot. It really isn't, considering what IRS agents are supposed to do while they're, you know, they're in their position. I mean, it's just like, I'm saying, like an insurance person that takes like the HIPAA law courses, and they know that they can't leak people's private medical information. But this is kind of what he did as an IRS agent. And of course, Democrats are saying that he should be pardoned and he shouldn't be in prison at all. And it is what it is, because orange man bad. You know, if you're going to continue to go down this road of, you know, we're going to just pretend as though whoever does something horrible against Trump is still a hero in my eyes, guess what? You're not winning in 2028. You're not even going to do well in the midterms in 2026 if you want the truth. I don't know why people are so hell-bent on just making Trump out to be this monster. You're not going to win this fight. You just saw in November you can't win this fight. What is the deal? I guess, you know what? It's just hard for me to understand because I don't have the mindset. Real quick, I got Jay in Westminster. Jay, you wanted to weigh in about in regards to Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of positives. I already had a house, so I didn't have to worry about the high mortgage. And so I took advantage, and that was the beginning of my retirement fund. I was putting money in CDs at 16%, 18%. And I was making nice savings at that time. But then the most positive is when Ronald Reagan started running for office, I could see such a better ideas coming from the Republican that I actually went over and switch parties from Democrat to Republican, never look back.
Yeah, Jay, I think a lot of people also made that decision as well. I mean, if you're looking at even, because some people are making the comparison online between Jimmy Carter and Joe Biden, do you see the similarities?
I wasn't paying that close of attention when I was younger, what
yeah.
Carter was doing. I do remember that they said that the helicopters crashed because the sand up out into the motors and caused them to crash. So,
well, you know what? That might be true because, remember, some people were talking about how there was no way that the helicopters would have been able to land in that situation, in that environment, or those elements. So that could be true.
Yeah, so anyway, like I said, the biggest positive for me was switching from Democrat to Republican so I could vote for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, amen. Well, Jay, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy New Year.
Same to you.
Thank you. Real quick, a text here. Jimmy Carter was a remarkable human being. He put Habitat for Humanity on the map, building houses throughout the nation, including here in Baltimore. As president, he was not good, and until Joe Biden, he was the worst in my lifetime. As a human being, he was a good man who lived a good life and stayed married to his wife for 7 decades. Yes, yeah, I will say, you know, you can say that as well. But, you know, when it comes down to what he did for the country, we're all being honest here, and he was not good for the country. Not at all. But real quick, like I said, the Dems are lobbying for Joe Biden to pardon Charles Littlejohn. We'll keep an eye on that. And that is the IRS agent that leaked President Trump's tax returns. I still want to know who leaked the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court right before the midterms of 2022. I know. I can't get that off my mind. I can't get it off my mind. That really, it truly bothered me. Because if it was a Republican that leaked that decision, you know, that their name, their face would be plastered all over the news. I guarantee you it was somebody within the administration that decided to do it because we were all talking about the red wave. And the one thing that really hit us hard was the Dobbs decision and the fact that they had to think about whether they were going to put abortion back at the state level. Had that not happened, I think that Republicans would have done a lot better in 2022. And so I do believe that it's election interference. But will we ever get an answer for it? I don't know. I doubt it. But we shall see. Again, we got Trump coming in, Republican majority. I don't want to really spend time on it. But boy, wouldn't it be nice to know who did it? I would love to know. All right. Coming up next, reduction in homicides in Baltimore City. We'll talk about it. Good morning. Happy Monday to all of you. Like I said, if you are working today, we're in the same boat. But you also probably saw there wasn't a ton of traffic. Love that. I really do love it. We were talking about the reduction in homicides just a second ago in Baltimore City. And I was wondering, what do you attribute that reduction to? Okay. Now, of course, I said Ivan Bates, Eric Barron. The fact that a lot of it did move to the surrounding counties, obviously Baltimore Police Department, right? The fact that they do patrol streets. They are overworked. We look at the overtime all the time, only because city council usually points it out. They're like, well, why are we paying BPD so much? And I'm thinking, is this a joke? Really? Why are you paying BPD so much? I'll tell you why. Because your policies has made Baltimore City extremely dangerous. Well, I want you to weigh in on this if you can. 410-WCBM-680. 410-922-6680. Marty in the text line did inform me those cars that sit near where the corner boys are doing their dealing. He said those are the shift supervisors. Now I see. Now I get it. I know there's somebody. They got to be someone important, right? The windows are so tinted. It's got to be someone important. Well, anyways, I also wanted to just note here, because I'm petty, I am really petty. Yes, there's a reduction in homicides and non-fatal shootings, but I wanted to just share with you, because I looked it up, some of the safest towns in America. Believe it or not, Baltimore City did not make the list, and actually no city or town in the state of Maryland made the list. You guys, we got to do better, all right? We got to do better. But the safest towns in America, Columbus, Indiana was number one. Wallingford, Connecticut, number two. Lone Peak, Utah, number three. Zionsville, Indiana, number four. And Monroe Township in New Jersey, number five safest towns in America. And I just put a note here. It's like where all the white people live. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, is there a correlation? I don't know. I don't know. We talked about subcultures in black communities just on Friday. And I will say, unfortunately, those areas are the most dangerous. Baltimore City still does make the list, even though there's been a reduction. I will also say, you know what? The population decline is also, you know, probably contributing to those numbers as well. Because if you think about it, there used to be, remember a time when there were over 1 million people in Baltimore City? Now you're down to about 500,000. I mean, look, you got to look at that percentage as well. It's not like they're doing it, you know, per capita, like the rate. They're talking about numbers right now. So, you know, we used to be over 300 homicides per year in Baltimore City. Now it's below the 300 mark. Okay, so remember, it's a little different how they're talking about the numbers, but I want to get your perspective on this. You know, what do you attribute the reduction of homicides to? 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. If you want to text me in the text line, download the WCBM app. It is free in the App Store. You have no excuse. It's free. Okay, but you can text me right through that app. I've got Mike in Dundalk. Mike, what do you think is attributing to the success of the reduction in homicides in Baltimore City?
It's the kids. I mean, the young kids, they can do what they want and be out the next day. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to get in trouble all the time, you know. You know what happened to me? First, they tried me out on Ritalin, and then, you know, when I got locked up, they sent me to training school, you know, and that's where I went, training school. And, you know, you got to have accountability for, I don't care how old you are. If you're nine and you carjack somebody, guess what? You're going to training school. I don't care. You still do the crime.
Yeah, yeah, there's more people pointing that out as well. Mike, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
You too, Juan.
Thank you. And so similarly, I've got a text here that says, Kim, they put the trigger pullers in jail. In other words, they arrested their way out of the problem. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. The downside is they are being replaced by younger, inexperienced trigger pullers. They hit their target less, but innocent victims more. Yeah, and that's exactly what Mike Dundalk was trying to say. It's like, look, if you've got these young kids that are committing all this crime and they're getting away with it, there's less people that they have to kill because they're going to take your car regardless. They don't have to kill you anymore for your car. You get out. Right. And we were talking about it last week, how Baltimore went viral, made national news headlines because there was a 9-year-old that carjacked a sweet old lady. It is. It is. You could say that as well. And I agree with that. Let's see. I've got Rich in Joppa. Rich, what do you attribute the reduction in homicides to?
Well, A, it is population. But Kim, imagine this. Imagine if we didn't have Maryland shock trauma. And imagine if this were 1970 with 1 million people with the same percentage of shootings without the medical care that we have now.
Oh,
the death rate would be unbelievable. I mean, how are shootings down? That's the main question.
Yeah, they're saying non-fatal shootings are down, but that doesn't mean, like Marty pointed out there, Rich, it doesn't mean that the shot spotter isn't picking it up. You know what I mean? They could just be horrible, you know, firing and aiming. So that could be.
But think about it. If it weren't for Maryland shock trauma, the death rate, if this were a different city that didn't have the excellent shock trauma health care that we have here, the murder rate would be, when it was 300, it would have been 450.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Thank you so much, Rich, for attributing to that. And I will say Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. You know, Rich made a great point there. Look, this is why the number one platform piece that I had is raising the pay for first responders. We don't pay them enough. He's absolutely correct in that. Absolutely correct. And I'm embarrassed that I didn't say that first. I really am. I really am. Again, I got some more texts coming in and also more callers coming in. I will say, yes, population decline. The subculture within Black America is still there. It's still prevalent. But I do agree with Mike and Dundalk and our texter. You know, if you've got younger kids that are out here committing these crimes or getting away with it, and they can do it without killing anyone. And yeah, a 9-year-old, could you imagine a 9-year-old actually pulling that trigger when he carjacked that little old woman? I doubt he could. It's so hard to even think or imagine that a 9-year-old would have a gun and would carjack somebody, right? It's so bizarre to even consider it. Wow, we were talking about this. I got an 8-year-old. Here she is tracking Santa on Christmas Eve, and this 9-year-old's carjacking a little old woman. It doesn't make sense, does it? I always say, when do you get the, you know, the CPS involved or, you know, the child abuse hotline. Because if your kid's out here carjacking people, I mean, there's obvious neglect there. That's obvious. A lot of these kids need to be taken out of the home altogether. I know that we probably don't even have the resources to do that. We probably don't even have the money, if we're being honest. But, I mean, what gives? A nine-year-old, you can still save a nine-year-old. Well, now, when you're talking about 16, 17, not sure you can save them. I mean, you could try. I wouldn't do it, personally. But some people could try. You put them in boarding school. You could. I would think by that time, if they've been, you know, hanging out with some of these people since they were 9 or 10, and they're 17 years old, it's going to be a tough, it's going to be a challenge. See, this is why education is so important, but they never focus on that. I got Joe in Randallstown. Joe, there's a reduction in homicides and non-fatal shootings in Baltimore. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a statistic or a report that means absolutely nothing unless a person such as yourself asks the people who are taking credit for these reports and these statistics that mean nothing to me, because I know how dishonest our federal government was with crime statistics. So why should I believe local crimes with statistics? But anyhow, what you have to ask these people, Kim, that are taking credit for these new reports and everything's better, 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 you have to ask them this. It's plain and simple. Okay, explain to me your effort that you put forth and your evidence that you can possibly put forth that allows you to take credit for such a report. In other words, what did you do? Or is the crime just down on itself? And then the real answer is, other than statistics, does anybody in Baltimore feel a difference? Does anybody feel safer? Okay? Those are the real, analyzing statistics and getting depressed about it gets us nowhere. We know these people are doing nothing, and that's why we can't let them take credit. If they're trying to take credit for something that, oh, it looks on paper, this looks better, we're doing our job, then ask them, what job are you doing? Tell them, explain it. Explain to me what you have done to take this credit. Am I clear?
Yeah, Joe. No, I agree with you. Thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
Sometimes I can't hear you. Hold on. My phone goes nuts.
Oh, okay.
Your phone shucks.
All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much. Hopefully you can hear me now, but I hope you have a happy new year. A lot of people feel like Joe in Randallstown, right? And he's right there on that. He's right there, right? We think that there's a city-county line, but there really isn't. And I would say that I have a Texan here that says, Kim, how many homicides in Baltimore County have compared to last year? Because most of those homicides in Baltimore County are nothing but a spillover from Baltimore City. And you're right about that, Texter. You're right. Even those that are in Anne Arundel County or Howard County, they trace these homicides, these suspects, back to Baltimore City. And then when I pointed out, Kim, you know, I'll hear on, you know, online, oh, Kim, you hate Baltimore City black people. No, I don't hate Baltimore City black people. Think about how ridiculous you sound. It's not the case. When you have, and even this shooting that you had in Towson, right? The mass shooting where the car flips over, catches on fire. Where did they then trace those people back to? Baltimore City. Baltimore City, okay? This is all part of the master plan. I call it the real blueprint. They wanted to take those housing vouchers, put them all over the state. You had Democrats in office that were just fine with it. Johnny Olszewski, Governor Westmore. They moved all these people. They demolished a lot of the housing projects. Gilmore Homes demolished a ton of them. And then where did they move those people? To surrounding counties. And where they could be great families. But guess what? They have cousins, uncles, brothers, you name it, that decided they are going to now stay with them in the county areas, and they're going to start robbing those individuals because they run out of people to rob and carjack in West Baltimore. You run out. And so that is what I believe is happening. So thank you, Texter, for pointing that out. Thank you, Joe, for pointing that out. I got Tom in White Marsh. Tom, you wanted to weigh in?
Hey, Kim, how you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. What do you think the reduction in crime, what do you think that attributes to?
$24 million from the American Rescue Fund was given to Safe Streets, unaccounted for. Nobody knows where it went. It was done a while ago, and I'm sure Brandon Scott made the deal to say, hey, stop the shooting. We'll pay you to stop the shooting.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do believe that as well, Tom, because, of course, a lot of those individuals, you have to be a convicted felon to work with Safe Streets. We found that out.
Absolutely.
And so
Absolutely.
To keep them off Absolutely. The streets, yeah, he just put them on the payroll. A lot of people are saying that as well.
It's unbelievable the corruption that there. I mean, that's taxpayer money that is unaccounted for, and they just act like it's a slush fund. And Catholic Charities is not helping at all. At all.
No, no. They're continuing the madness.
Total corruption.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
You too, Kim. Take care.
Thank you. And that's another piece of this. And I said before, Catholic Charities, LifeBridge, these are reputable organizations, okay? You can point to where they've done great work. You really can. That's why I asked earlier, why would you get caught up in something like Safe Streets? Obviously, there's money in it for you, but is the money that great? Is it really that great? Because we sat back. Remember we took a look at the top salaries at LifeBridge? I was blown away. Some of you were blown away. A lot of them making a ton of money each year, millions of dollars. Is it really worth the money? Is it? Because what we're doing today in these streets, right, whether it's Baltimore County, Baltimore City, what have you, and the fact that you're not really educating a lot of these kids, what you're doing is you're basically setting us up for nothing but absolute failure in the next 5 to 10 years. Because those 9-year-olds, what are they going to be? They're going to be 19 soon. It's going to be out of control. So they're probably thinking, I'm going to collect my money now, and then I'm going to move to a place like Columbus, Indiana, or Wallingford, Connecticut, Lone Peak, Utah, as I destroy the Baltimore region because I'm making money doing that, and then I'm going to take my cash, and I'm going to go to one of the safest towns in America because I'll have money to do that. If that's what you're doing, I just want to let you know that you're probably, most likely, not going to get to heaven. If you're okay with not getting into heaven, sure. If you don't fear God, sure, you go ahead and do what you're going to do. But those that have this kind of greed with larceny in your heart, I can't imagine anybody would open the pearly gates for you. Go back to the phone line. Jamie in Kaysville. Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, Kim. I hope you have a happy new year.
Thank you. Thank you. What do you think about this reduction in homicides?
I don't know. I think it's all the playing with the numbers. Anybody that shoots somebody, that's a potential homicide. But I want to get back to this school system where what you said, how they took the kids from the high rises. And these are kids that were never well educated because the Baltimore Union school system is so corrupt. They pushed 3 people through. And just to remind you, it's the Bush, No Child Left Behind, that garbage George Bush and his daughter and the rest of them. I'm telling you. They took all these kids that were not educated and they threw them around in the county. And what happens? You're not dealing with the parents or all the cousins. The kids are in the school system, and they got to catch up, and it pulls everybody else back.
Yeah.
But all these people like Hogan, they gave away $600 million to the Dundalk people that never had they didn't manufacture one glove. I bet you that was over $600 million wasted in the PPE money. These are all corrupt individuals.
Yeah, yeah. Jamie, and the problem also with this is 5 to 10 years from now, it's only going to be worse, even if the rest of the country's thriving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie, thank you so much.
Yeah. NIMBY, that's the word. Not in my backyard until it hits your backyard, dummy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Jamie, have a happy new year. Thank you
have
so much for calling
happy
in.
Happy new year.
Yeah, you too. And that is a thing, right? Not in my backyard. And I told you guys this. But my team and I, we went knocking doors in Rogers Forge right after the Rogers Forge shooting. The father, remember the father that was shot at 11:30 in the morning right in his own driveway? And he had a very hard time. Apparently he was in the hospital for a very long time trying to recover. Thank God he lived through that. Now what condition he's in now, I don't know, right? But those kids that they were talking about arresting, guess where they linked them back to? Baltimore City. Were you surprised? Nobody was surprised by that. But we went to go knock doors, and I told you, there was a gentleman that opened his door, and he said, well, that was 2 blocks away. That wasn't on this block. I wanted to ask him, are you high? I mean, wait, how did you get such a nice house in such a nice neighborhood being this dumb? And that's what I wanted to say, but I just sat there and said, I'm Kim Klasick, and I'm running for Congress. I know you're not going to vote for me because that would take a certain IQ level, and I just don't think you have it. That's what I should have said, but I let it go. But yes, I believe many people are weighing in this morning and very correct on that. Scott in Westminster sent a text in a text line. He said, Kim, the Baltimore City government changed the way murders and non-fatal shootings are calculated to achieve the desired result. No, so Scott, I would say the homicide number I would say that it probably most likely is correct. Okay. The thing with the non-fatal shootings or even shootings in general, I don't know if they're still counting what they're getting on ShotSpotter. That's what I would say. Because ShotSpotter, okay, it picks up shots all the time. You could ask anybody that works for BPD. They're constantly going to scenes where ShotSpotter picked up shots fired. But when they get there, usually there isn't a victim. There's nobody, you know, around. Now, there has been times where victims of non-fatal shootings, even though that number is down, they'll arrive at a hospital days later because they can't take it anymore. But I wonder how many people are non-fatally shot that do not go in at all. I mean, if you get grazed by a bullet and you're some well-known gang member, are you going to the hospital? No. You're going to CVS. You're getting some, you know, gauze. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going where the police are. You really aren't. So the non-fatal shooting number, I can't really discuss that because I don't think it's real. But when it comes to the homicide number, Scott, to answer your question, I think that number most likely is correct. I got another text here from Robert. He says, hey, Kim, I believe it is due to Baltimore City exporting their crime out of Baltimore while Johnny Ghetto is importing crime to Baltimore County. Maybe BlackRock Corporation is the real puppet master here who has a capital, will profit from buying cheap properties en masse and flipping them. Robert, such a great and true statement there. I mean, Baltimore County's out of control. When I first started hearing about stuff happening in Cockeysville or even in Hunt Valley, right? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. There was a shooting where? Oh, gosh. You know, but still, there are many people in those neighborhoods that are not speaking up, which is surprising, because I'm sure their property value is decreasing. All right. Coming up next, we will continue this discussion. We'll wrap it up. But then we also will talk about the bird flu, because, of course, we've got our favorite Big Pharma. They're also drug dealers. They're now pushing the new and latest vaccine. We'll talk about that when we get back. All right, good morning. Happy Monday morning. Doesn't feel like a regular Monday, right? It really doesn't. We're talking about the reduction in homicides. I was giving Baltimore City their flowers. There are less homicides in Baltimore, but there's also less people. And a lot of the Baltimore City gangsters are committing crime in Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, and Howard County. Interesting, huh? Just so I can go back here, because I know people are going to be like, oh, there's Kim. Talking down about black people. I was not talking down about black people. We talked about this on Friday. Of course, there is black culture, and then there is a subculture that is very prevalent in the black community. And that is what I, you know, some of you call the ghetto culture, the subculture. And so the safest town in America, I think it was top three. You had Wallingford, Connecticut. I typed in one of them just to see what the demographics were. Just so you know, there's 44,000 people in Wallingford, Connecticut. The racial makeup, 80% white, 11% Hispanic, and 4.4% Asian. Okay. Blacks didn't even make the list. All right. So look, I'm not saying it's black culture. You guys know I am black. Okay. And I don't know anybody that is violent or some gang member. I have a very large family and none of us are that. But that subculture, it'll get you every time. If we could get rid of the subculture, you could probably get rid of a lot of the crime and violence. But you would have to admit it, and you would have to take it on. Because as soon as you mention, it's the gangster rap, it's, you know, some of these ridiculous video games, and again, you can be any color and subscribe to that subculture, right? But this whole thing, like, shoot 'em up, you know, wearing basically the prison uniform. I mean, how many times do you see guys out there with, like, the white T-shirt and the baggy jeans and stuff? You know, they call that the prison uniform for a reason, okay? That's what the guys, a lot of them, would wear in the yard. Why are we glorifying any of that? And then, meanwhile, it looks awful. And then you hear rap songs, you're like, I got the fresh white tee. You're just like, all right, I can go to Walmart, too. Bill at Owings Mills. Bill, would you like to weigh in?
Yes, I'll just comment on what you just said. I find wearing pants hanging down below your bunghole is garbage. And they expect us to accept it. That's tacky. It's disgusting, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
But let me put it to you this way. With the exception of Ivan Bates and people like that want to really do something, I declare Democrats, and that's including Jimmy Carter, who was a disaster as a president, a bunch of big zeros. And let me tell you what I remember what he did. I don't remember anything good that he did except flip-flop. He gave away our Panama Canal, signed it away that we built. Now the Chinese have it. Look how that's treason, as far as I'm concerned. We built that. That's ours. And now we have to answer to the Chinese.
Yeah.
And the next thing is that the Iran hostage thing. He did zero, nothing.
Yeah.
So, and yeah. I got to tell you something. I've never met a Democrat that's ever done anything for me personally, except raise my taxes.
Well, you know
and
what?
If people don't like it, that's tough cookies.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year. Coming up on a break here. But a lot of people have said the same thing. You know, President Trump is talking about getting that Panama Canal back. Did you hear about that? Yeah. Yeah. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the bird flu and the vaccines. There's drug pushers everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's more drug pushers. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Kim Plasek Live starts now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right. Good morning. Happy Monday. You're at work like I am. Well, you know, you probably enjoyed that there wasn't much traffic out there. And I did enjoy that. I really did. For the break, we were talking about Jimmy Carter and his passing over the weekend. Died at 100 years old. A lot of people were remembering him online. We did just read President Trump's statement. He did obviously mention that he was very controversial and wasn't everybody's favorite, but he was also trying to say nothing but polite and nice things. I've got Tom and Owings Mills. Tom, you wanted to weigh in on Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, for some reason, I've always been able to bond with foreigners, and I once knew an Iranian entrepreneur who had a lot of high contacts with members of the Iranian government when he lived in Iran. At one point in discussion with Jimmy Carter, he leaned towards me and almost in a whisper, and you could tell by the look on his face he was about to tell me something he had never told to any non-Iranian, and that was that Jimmy Carter had arranged the taking of the hostages himself.
Oh,
and
wow.
In the Desert One, as a caller just related, it was so botched to begin with two American helicopters colliding with each other and crashing and burning. And there were strange parallels between the Eisenhower administration and the Carter administration. There was a Democrat in Iran, a Democratic leader named Moshe Dee, and when he was about to move Iran in a Democratic direction, Eisenhower had the CIA take him out and put the Shah of Iran in power, who was a ruthless, brutal dictator. And Jimmy Carter brought the Shah for cancer treatment to America at about the same time the hostages were taken. So he was but he was not an American president.
A lot of people
have our interests in mind.
A lot of people are definitely weighing in and saying the same thing, Tom. So you're saying he didn't rely on the Pentagon or the State Department. He relied on what he wanted to do during that, the rescue of the hostages?
The one rescue was just botched from beginning to end. There was no chance that that was going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you see similarities in what we saw in Afghanistan recently?
Yeah, I would say there are, yes. Oh. And, you know, at the very beginning of the Biden administration, Jimmy Carter had a meeting with him. Right at the very inception of the Biden administration, the two of them got together as if to, you know, get their heads together on something.
Yeah, I wonder what. It's to be a fly on the wall, right? Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for weighing in, and I hope you have a great week.
You too.
Thank you. Happy New Year. I've got Robert in Towson. Robert, did you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter? Hello, Robert? All right, Robert did not hang on. I know a lot of people are weighing in. You know, you guys are killing me. I'm supposed to be trying to be nice in 2025. Remember, that's the one thing that's at the top of my list for my New Year's resolutions is to be nice. Brian just pointed out, it's still 2024. So are you saying I don't have to be nice? Bill in Canesville, did you want to weigh in on Jimmy Carter?
Yes. Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
First of all, I was out of the Army for about 3 years when he took over. There were continuous gas lines, continuous, all over the city. Second, I had to buy a car, and cars were about 16 or 17%. Houses were approximately, and I'd like to correct the previous caller, housing was about 18%. And he didn't do anything about it. And in addition, he sent two poorly equipped helicopters into the desert to do a rescue mission, and all eight occupants died.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't land helicopters. That's how bad he cut the military back.
Yeah. Well, Bill, a lot of people are remembering him just the way that you are.
But here it is. We're trying to eulogize somebody to the good who did no good except when he was out of government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing else to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. Hope you have a happy new year. I get it. I mean, I get it. I trust me, I get it, guys. I mean, is he most likely the worst president in history? Yes. Am I going to harp on that today? I'm going to be honest, I'm not. I'm not going to do it. I will say that, of course, like I mentioned, I was not alive during those times, but I've read and I've seen a lot of things that were posted online, whether it's YouTube or what have you. They'll have, you know, you can always see the videos of what happened in some of these instances. And, yeah, it looked like a hot mess. And as people were pointing out, even when it comes to getting gas, it looked awful. And, you know, you had Ronald Reagan that won handedly. And to me, look, again, I wasn't there. It seemed like there's a lot of similarities between Jimmy Carter's presidency and President Joe Biden's presidency. And when you think about President Trump winning the popular vote, winning all seven swing states, you know, I mean, he barely you know, flinched at all. Like, they didn't come close to taking Trump this election cycle. Yet you had the media, you had all these individuals saying, oh, no, it's going to be a close race. It wasn't. It couldn't be. It couldn't be. And as many people are pointing out, you know, when you're looking at the Democrat Party today, and it really is for, like, the elites, right, those that are so rich that they're not feeling any of the inflation or anything else that many of us are dealing with, or it's for those that, in my view, and this is me talking, my opinion, it's for those that are living on government-assisted programs that don't want to see any of those cut back. And again, there are many great people that use government-assisted programs. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. But what I am saying is that there are a lot of people that do use those programs to their advantage. They manipulate the system. They know exactly how to do it for their gain. And if you're even thinking about the fact that Social Security, all the discussion we're having right now, where Social Security might not be there when I'm, you know, ready to draw from it, it's a crazy thought that we're still putting so much money into these programs for able-bodied Americans that can go and get a job. I mean, I think for the 100th time, I will say, the kids that live in homes, households that receive food stamps, why the hell are they the kids that get free lunch? Their parents have money to shop at the grocery store, thanks to me, the taxpayer. Why are they also getting free lunch at school? And in many cases, free breakfast and after-school snack that looks close or similar to dinner. You know, there's this thing called personal responsibility that we just won't even tap into, and I'm not going to get off on this tangent. But, yes, if I'm looking at what Jimmy Carter did when he was in office, it was a disaster. It was a disaster. And, you know, like President Trump was trying to do, I know his comments kind of pivoted all over the place. You know, me and Melania are praying for his family, things like that. That's the best we could say, okay? I mean, you don't want to be the person that kicks someone as their, you know, right before their funeral. I feel like it's tough to do that, right? Are you really a Christian when you do it? I don't know. I don't think so. That's how I look at it. Raised, you know, a little different, I guess. I got Patrick in Ellicott City. Patrick, did you want to weigh in?
Yes, my father knew of Jimmy Carter and knew him in the 40s and 50s in the Navy. My father was in naval intelligence. And in 1976, when he was running for president, I was 15, and I said to my father, I said, well, isn't it neat that a peanut farmer is running for president? He smiled and looked at me and said, he ain't no peanut farmer.
Oh.
Which means he was a lot more, because he was picked to be in the new nuclear submarine thing, and they weren't picking DEI or quotas.
Yeah.
He was a super smart guy. And I guess the reality is that when he goes back home, politics would be the next natural thing for him to do, because he's like a big hero to that community. And
right.
His problem
in office was that he wanted to be the executive branch and have his fingerprints on every single solitary thing. And it was, he just couldn't handle it.
Wow.
And he had bad economic instincts, too. You know, he wanted to be a micromanager.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't have great grounding as far as how to deal with Washington either, but his policies were junk. But that's about it. But he wasn't just a peanut farmer. That guy was a super shrewd, intelligent guy.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick. I appreciate you weighing in. I hope you have a happy new year.
Bye.
Thank you. All right. Well, you know, that was, look, I think that was maybe a great way to sum it up. Real quick, before we get into the reduction in homicides in Baltimore, I did want to note that right now you've got Democrats that are lobbying for President Joe Biden to pardon a certain individual by the name of Charles Littlejohn. Do you remember that name? Do you recall who that is? He is the IRS agent that leaked President Trump's tax returns. That's right. He was sentenced to 5 years in prison, and now you've got many Democrats that are asking Joe Biden to pardon him. Here's what I say about that. You know, be careful what you wish for, Democrats. You're now looking to see how you can get out of the hole here. Charles Littlejohn did something that was horribly illegal. And leaking someone's tax returns, you know, the fact that he only got 5 years, I think is, because how much I'm sure he got time served, that's not a lot. It really isn't, considering what IRS agents are supposed to do while they're, you know, they're in their position. I mean, it's just like, say, like an insurance person that takes, like, the HIPAA law courses, and they know that they can't leak people's private medical information. But this is kind of what he did as an IRS agent. And, of course, Democrats are saying that he should be pardoned and he shouldn't be in prison at all. And it is what it is because orange man bad. You know, if you're going to continue to go down this road, of, you know, we're going to just pretend as though whoever does something horrible against Trump is still a hero in my eyes. Guess what? You're not winning in 2028. You're not even going to do well in the midterms in 2026 if you want the truth. I don't know why people are so hell-bent on just making Trump out to be this monster. You're not going to win this fight. You just saw in November you can't win this fight. What is the deal? I guess, you know what? It's just hard for me to understand because I don't have the mindset. Real quick, I got Jay in Westminster. Jay, you wanted to weigh in about in regards to Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of positives. I already had a house, so I didn't have to worry about the high mortgage. And so I took advantage, and that was the beginning of my retirement fund. I was putting money in CDs at 16%, 18%. And I was making nice savings at that time. But then the most positive is when Ronald Reagan started running for office, I could see such a better ideas coming from the Republican that I actually went over and switched parties from Democrat to Republican, never looked back.
Yeah, Jay, I think a lot of people also made that decision as well. I mean, if you're looking at even, because some people are making the comparison online between Jimmy Carter and Joe Biden, do you see the similarities?
I wasn't paying that close of attention when I was younger, what
yeah.
Carter was doing. I do remember that they said that the helicopters crashed because the motors sucked the sand up out into the motors and caused them to crash. So,
well, you know what? That might be true because, remember, some people were talking about how there was no way that the helicopters would have been able to land in that situation, in that environment, or those elements. So that could be true.
Yeah, so anyway, like I said, the biggest positive for me was switching from Democrat to Republican so I could vote for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, amen. Well, Jay, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
Same to you.
Thank you. Real quick, a text here. Jimmy Carter was a remarkable human being. He put Habitat for Humanity on the map, building houses throughout the nation, including here in Baltimore. As president, he was not good, and until Joe Biden, he was the worst in my lifetime. As a human being, he was a good man who lived a good life and stayed married to his wife for 7 decades. Yes, yeah, I will say, you know, you can say that as well. But, you know, when it comes down to what he did for the country, we're all being honest here, and he was not good for the country. Not at all. But real quick, like I said, the Dems are lobbying for Joe Biden to pardon Charles Littlejohn. We'll keep an eye on that. and that is the IRS agent that leaked President Trump's tax returns. I still want to know who leaked the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court right before the midterms of 2022. I know. I can't get that off my mind. I can't get it off my mind. That really, it truly bothered me. Because if it was a Republican that leaked that decision, you know, that their name, their face would be plastered all over the news. I guarantee you it was somebody within the administration that decided to do it because we were all talking about the red wave. And the one thing that really hit us hard was the Dobbs decision and the fact that they had to think about whether they were going to put abortion back at the state level. Had that not happened, I think that Republicans would have done a lot better in 2022. And so I do believe that it's election interference. But will we ever get an answer for it? I don't know. I doubt it. But we shall see. Again, we got Trump coming in, Republican majority. I don't want to really spend time on it. But boy, wouldn't it be nice to know who did it? I would love to know. All right. Coming up next, reduction in homicides in Baltimore City. We'll talk about it. All right. Good morning. Happy Monday to all of you. Like I said, if you are working today, we're in the same boat. But you also probably saw there wasn't a ton of traffic. Love that. I really do love it. We were talking about the reduction in homicides just a second ago in Baltimore City. And I was wondering, what do you attribute that reduction to? Okay. Now, of course, I said Ivan Bates, Eric Barron, the fact that a lot of it did move to the surrounding counties, obviously Baltimore Police Department, right? The fact that they do patrol streets. They are overworked. We look at the overtime all the time, only because city council usually points it out. They're like, well, why are we paying BPD so much? And I'm thinking, is this a joke? Really? Why are you paying BPD so much? I'll tell you why. Because your policies has made Baltimore City extremely dangerous. Well, I want you to weigh in on this if you can. 410-WCBM-680. 410-922-6680. Marty in the text line did inform me those cars that sit near where the corner boys are doing their dealing. He said those are the shift supervisors. Now I see. Now I get it. I know there's somebody. They got to be somewhat important, right? The windows are so tinted. It's got to be somewhat important. Well, anyways, I also wanted to just note here, because I'm petty, I am really petty. Yes, there's a reduction in homicides and non-fatal shootings, but I wanted to just share with you, because I looked it up, some of the safest towns in America. Believe it or not, Baltimore City did not make the list, and actually no city or town in the state of Maryland made the list. You guys, we got to do better, all right? We got to do better. But the safest towns in America, Columbus, Indiana was number one. Wallingford, Connecticut, number two. Lone Peak, Utah, number three. Zionsville, Indiana, number four. And Monroe Township in New Jersey, number five safest towns in America. And I just put a note here. It's like where all the white people live. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wonder, you know, is there a correlation? I don't know. I don't know. We talked about subcultures in black communities just on Friday. And I will say, unfortunately, those areas are the most dangerous. Baltimore City still does make the list, even though there's been a reduction. I will also say, you know what? The population decline is also, you know, probably contributing to those numbers as well. Because if you think about it, there used to be, remember a time when there were over 1 million people in Baltimore City? Now you're down to about 500,000. I mean, look, you got to look at that percentage as well. It's not like they're doing it, you know, per capita, like the rate. They're talking about numbers right now. So, you know, we used to be over 300 homicides per year in Baltimore City. Now it's below the 300 mark. Okay, so remember, it's a little different how they're talking about the numbers, but I want to get your perspective on this. You know, what do you attribute the reduction of homicides to? 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. If you want to text me in the text line, download the WCBM app. It is free in the App Store. You have no excuse. It's free. Okay, but you can text me right through that app. I've got Mike in Dundalk. Mike, what do you think is attributing to the success of the reduction in homicides in Baltimore City?
It's the kids. I mean, the young kids, they can do what they want and be out the next day. I mean, when I was a kid, I used to get in trouble all the time, you know? You know what happened to me? First, they tried me out on Ritalin, and then, you know, when I got locked up, they sent me to training school, you know, and that's where I went, training school. And, you know, you got to have accountability for, I don't care how old you are. If you're nine and you carjack somebody, guess what? You're going to training school. I don't care. and you still did the crime.
Yeah, yeah. There's more people pointing that out as well. Mike, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy New Year.
You too, Juan.
Thank you. And so similarly, I've got a text here that says, Kim, they put the trigger pullers in jail. In other words, they arrested their way out of the problem. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. The downside is they are being replaced by younger, inexperienced trigger pullers. They hit their target less, but innocent victims more. Yeah, and that's exactly what Mike Dadok was trying to say. It's like, look, if you've got these young kids that are committing all this crime and they're getting away with it, there's less people that they have to kill because they're going to take your car regardless. They don't have to kill you anymore for your car. You get out. Right. And we were talking about it last week, how Baltimore went viral, made national news headlines because there was a 9-year-old that carjacked a sweet old lady. It is. You could say that as well. And I agree with that. Let's see. I've got Rich in Joppa. Rich, what do you attribute the reduction in homicides to?
Well, A, it is population. But Kim, imagine this. Imagine if we didn't have Maryland shock trauma. And imagine if this were 1970 with a million people with the same percentage of shootings without the medical care that we have now.
Oh,
the death rate would be unbelievable. I mean, how are the shootings down? That's the main question.
Yeah, they're saying non-fatal shootings are down, but that doesn't mean, like Marty pointed out there, Rich, it doesn't mean that the shot spotter isn't picking it up. You know what I mean? They could just be horrible, you know, firing and aiming. So that could be.
But think about it. If it weren't for Maryland shock trauma, the death rate, if this were a different city that didn't have the excellent shock trauma health care that we have here, the murder rate would be, when it was 300, it would have been 450.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Thank you so much, Rich, for tuning to that. And I will say Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. You know, Rich made a great point there. Look, this is why the number one platform piece that I had is raising the pay for first responders. We don't pay them enough. He's absolutely correct in that. Absolutely correct. And I'm embarrassed that I didn't say that first. I really am. Again, I got some more texts coming in and also more callers coming in. I will say, yes, population decline. The subculture within Black America is still there. It's still prevalent. But I do agree with Mike and Dundalk and our texter. You know, if you've got younger kids that are out here committing these crimes or getting away with it, and they can do it without killing anyone. And, yeah, a 9-year-old, could you imagine a 9-year-old actually pulling that trigger when he carjacked that little old woman? I doubt he could. It's so hard to even think or imagine that a 9-year-old would have a gun and would carjack somebody, right? It's so bizarre to even consider it. Wow, we were talking about this. I got an 8-year-old. Here she is tracking Santa on Christmas Eve, and this 9-year-old's carjacking a little old woman. It doesn't make sense, does it? I always say, when do you get the CPS involved or, you know, the child abuse hotline? Because if your kid's out here carjacking people, I mean, there's obvious neglect there. That's obvious. A lot of these kids are going to be taken out of the home altogether. I know that we probably don't even have the resources to do that. We probably don't even have the money, if we're being honest. But, I mean, what gives? A 9-year-old, you could still save a 9-year-old. Well, now, when you're talking about 16, 17, not sure you could save them. I mean, you could try. I wouldn't do it, personally. But some people could try. You put them in boarding school. You could. I would think by that time, if they've been, you know, hanging out with some of these people since they were 9 or 10 and they're 17 years old, it's going to be a challenge. See, this is why education is so important, but they never focus on that. I got Joe in Randallstown. Joe, there's a reduction in homicides and non-fatal shootings in Baltimore. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a statistic or a report that means absolutely nothing unless a person such as yourself asks the people who are taking credit for these reports and these statistics that mean nothing to me because I know how dishonest our federal government was with crime statistics. So why should I believe local crimes with statistics? But anyhow, what you have to ask these people, Kim, that are taking credit for these new reports and everything's better, you have to ask them this. It's plain and simple. Okay, explain to me your effort that you put forth and your evidence that you can possibly put forth that allows you to take credit for such a report. In other words, what did you do
or is the crime just down on itself? And then the real answer is, other than statistics, does anybody in Baltimore feel a difference? Does anybody feel safer? Okay? Those are the real, analyzing statistics and getting depressed about it, it gets us nowhere. We know these people are doing nothing, and that's why we can't let them take credit. If they're trying to take credit for something that, oh, it looks on paper, this looks better, we're doing our job, then ask them, what job are you doing? Tell them, explain to me what you have done to take this credit. Am I clear?
Yeah, Joe. No, I agree with you. Thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
I can't hear you. Hold on. My phone goes nuts.
Oh, okay.
Your phone shucks.
All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much. Hopefully you can hear me now, but I hope you have a happy new year. A lot of people feel like Joe in Randallstown, right? And he's right there on that. He's right there, right? We think that there's a city-county line, but there really isn't. And I would say that I have a text here that says, Kim, how many homicides in Baltimore County have compared to last year? Because most of those homicides in Baltimore County are nothing but a spillover from Baltimore City. And you're right about that, Texter. You're right. Even those that are in Anne Arundel County or Howard County, they trace these homicides, these suspects, back to Baltimore City. And then when I pointed out, Kim, you know, I'll hear on online, oh, Kim, you hate Baltimore City black people. No, I don't hate Baltimore City black people. Think about how ridiculous you sound. It's not the case. When you have, and even the shooting that you had in Towson, right? The mass shooting where the car flips over, catches on fire. Where did they then trace those people back to? Baltimore City. Baltimore City, okay? This is all part of the master plan. I call it the real blueprint. They wanted to take those housing vouchers, put them all over the state. You had Democrats in office that were just fine with it. Johnny Olszewski, Governor Westmore, they moved all these people. They demolished a lot of the housing projects. Gilmore Homes demolished a ton of them. And then where did they move those people? To surrounding counties. And where they could be great families. But guess what? They have cousins, uncles, brothers, you name it, that decided they are going to now stay with them in the county areas, and they're going to start robbing those individuals because they run out of people to rob and carjack in West Baltimore. You run out. And so that is what I believe is happening. So thank you, Texter, for pointing that out. Thank you, Joe, for pointing that out. I got Tom in White Marsh. Tom, you wanted to weigh in?
Hey, Kim. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. What do you think the reduction in crime, what do you think that attributes to?
$24 million from the American Rescue Fund was given to Save Streets, unaccounted for. Nobody knows where it went. It was done a while ago, and I'm sure Brandon Scott made the deal to say, hey, stop the shooting. We'll pay you to stop the shooting.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do believe that as well, Tom, because, of course, a lot of those individuals, you have to be a convicted felon to work with Safe Streets. We found that out.
Absolutely.
And so
Absolutely.
To keep them off Absolutely. The streets, yeah, he just put them on the payroll. A lot of people are saying that as well.
It's unbelievable, the corruption there. I mean, that's taxpayer money that is unaccounted for, and they just act like it's a slush fund. And Catholic Charities is not helping at all. At all.
No, they're continuing the madness.
Total corruption.
Yeah. Tom, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
You too, Kim. Take care.
Thank you. And that's another piece of this. And I said before, Catholic Charities, LifeBridge, these are reputable organizations, okay? You can point to where they've done great work. You really can. That's why I asked earlier, why would you get caught up in something like Safe Streets? Obviously, there's money in it for you, but is the money that great? Is it really that great? Because we sat back. Remember we took a look at the top salaries at LifeBridge? I was blown away. Some of you were blown away. A lot of them making a ton of money each year, millions of dollars. Is it really worth the money? Is it? Because what we're doing today in these streets, right, whether it's Baltimore County, Baltimore City, what have you, and the fact that you're not really educating a lot of these kids, what you're doing is you're basically setting us up for nothing but absolute failure in the next 5 to 10 years. Because those 9-year-olds, what are they going to be? They're going to be 19 soon. It's going to be out of control. So they're probably thinking, I'm going to collect my money now, and then I'm going to move to a place like Columbus, Indiana, or Wallingford, Connecticut, Lone Peak, Utah, as I destroy the Baltimore region, because I'm making money doing that, and then I'm going to take my cash, and I'm going to go to one of the safest towns in America. Because I'll have money to do that. If that's what you're doing, I just want to let you know, then you're probably, most likely, not getting into heaven. If you're okay with not getting into heaven, sure. If you don't fear God, sure, you go ahead and do what you're going to do. But those that have this kind of greed with larceny in your heart, I can't imagine anybody would open the pearly gates for you. Go back to the phone line. Jamie in Kaysville. Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, Kim. I hope you have a happy new year.
Thank you. Thank you. What do you think about this reduction in homicides?
I don't know. I think it's all the playing with the numbers. Anybody that shoots somebody, that's a potential homicide. But I want to get back to this school system where what you said, how they took the kids from the high rises. And these are kids that were never well educated because the Baltimore Union school system is so corrupt. They pushed three people through. And just to remind you, it's the Bush, No Child Left Behind, that garbage George Bush and his daughter and the rest of them. I'm telling you, they took all these kids that were not educated and they threw them around in the county. And what happens? They're not dealing with the parents or all the cousins. The kids are in the school system and they got to catch up and it pulls everybody else back.
Yeah.
But all these people like Hogan, they gave away $600 million to the Dundalk people that never had they didn't manufacture one glove. I bet you that was over $600 million wasted in the PPE money. These are all corrupt individuals.
Yeah, yeah. Jamie, and the problem also with this is 5 to 10 years from now, it's only going to be worse, even if the rest of the country's thriving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jamie, thank you so much.
Yeah. NIMBY, that's the word. Not in my backyard until it hits your backyard, dummy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep. Jamie, have a happy new year. Thank you
have
so much for calling
happy
in.
Happy new year.
Yeah, you too. And that is a thing, right? Not in my backyard. And I told you guys this. But my team and I, we went knocking doors in Rogers Forge right after the Rogers Forge shooting. The father, remember the father that was shot at 11:30 in the morning right in his own driveway? And he had a very hard time. Apparently he was in the hospital for a very long time trying to recover. Thank God he lived through that. Now what condition he's in now, I don't know, right? But those kids that they were talking about arresting, guess where they linked them back to? Baltimore City. Were you surprised? Nobody was surprised by that. But we went to go knock doors, and I told you, there was a gentleman that opened his door, and he said, well, that was two blocks away. That wasn't on this block. I wanted to ask him, are you high? I mean, wait, how did you get such a nice house in such a nice neighborhood being this dumb? That's what I wanted to say, but I just sat there and said, I'm Kim Klasick, and I'm running for Congress. I know you're not going to vote for me because that would take a certain IQ level, and I just don't think you have it. That's what I should have said, but I let it go. But yes, I believe many people are weighing in this morning and very correct on that. Scott in Westminster sent a text in a text line. He said, Kim, the Baltimore City government changed the way murders and non-fatal shootings are calculated to achieve the desired result. No, so Scott, I would say the homicide number, I would say that it probably most likely is correct. Okay, the thing with the non-fatal shootings or even shootings in general, I don't know if they're still counting what they're getting on ShotSpotter. That's what I would say. Because ShotSpotter, okay, it picks up shots all the time. You could ask anybody that works for BPD. They're constantly going to scenes where ShotSpotter picked up shots fired. But when they get there, usually there isn't a victim. There's nobody, you know, around. Now, there has been times where victims of non-fatal shootings, even though that number is down, they'll arrive at a hospital days later because they can't take it anymore. But I wonder how many people are non-fatally shot that do not go in at all. I mean, if you get grazed by a bullet and you're some well-known gang member, are you going to the hospital? No. You're going to CVS. You're getting some, you know, gauze. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going where the police are. You really aren't. So the non-fatal shooting number, I can't really discuss that because I don't think it's real. But when it comes to the homicide number, Scott, to answer your question, I think that number most likely is correct. I got another text here from Robert. He says, hey, Kim, I believe it is due to Baltimore City exporting their crime out of Baltimore while Johnny Ghetto is importing crime to Baltimore County. Maybe BlackRock Corporation is the real puppet master here who has a capital, will profit from buying cheap properties en masse and flipping them. Robert, such a great and true statement there. I mean, Baltimore County is out of control. When I first started hearing about stuff happening in Cockeysville or even in Hunt Valley, right? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. There was a shooting where? Oh, gosh. You know, but still, there are many people in those neighborhoods that are not speaking up, which is surprising, because I'm sure their property value is decreasing. All right. Coming up next, we will continue this discussion. We'll wrap it up. But then we also will talk about the bird flu, because, of course, we've got our favorite Big Pharma. They're also drug dealers. They're now pushing the new and latest vaccine. We'll talk about that when we get back. All right. Good morning. Happy Monday morning. Doesn't feel like a regular Monday, right? It really doesn't. We're talking about the reduction in homicides. I was giving Baltimore City their flowers. There are less homicides in Baltimore, but there's also less people. And a lot of the Baltimore City gangsters are committing crime in Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, and Howard County. Interesting, huh? Just so I could go back here, because I know people are going to be like, oh, there's Kim talking down about black people. I was not talking down about black people. We talked about this on Friday. Of course, there is black culture, and then there is a subculture that is very prevalent in the black community. And that is what I, you know, some of you call the ghetto culture, the subculture. And so the safest town in America, I think it was top three. You had Wallingford, Connecticut. I typed in one of them just to see what the demographics were. Just so you know, there's 44,000 people in Wallingford, Connecticut. The racial makeup, 80% white, 11% Hispanic, and 4.4% Asian. Okay. Blacks didn't even make the list. All right. So look, I'm not saying it's black culture. You guys know I am black. Okay. And I don't know anybody that is violent or some gang member. I have a very large family and none of us are that. But that subculture, it'll get you every time. If we could get rid of the subculture, you could probably get rid of a lot of the crime and violence. But you would have to admit it and you would have to take it on. Because as soon as you mention, it's the gangster rap. It's, you know, some of these ridiculous video games. And again, you can be any color and subscribe to that subculture, right? But this whole thing, like shoot 'em up, you know, wearing basically the prison uniform. I mean, how many times do you see guys out there with like the white T-shirt and the baggy jeans and stuff? Yeah, they call that the prison uniform for a reason. Okay, that's what the guys, a lot of them, would wear in the yard. Why are we glorifying any of that? And then meanwhile, it looks awful. And then you hear rap songs, you're like, I got the fresh white tea. You're just like, all right, I can go to Walmart too. Bill at Owings Mills, Bill, would you like to weigh in?
Yes, I'll just comment on what you just said. I find wearing pants hanging down below your bunghole is garbage. And they expect us to accept it. That's tacky, it's disgusting, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
But let me put it to you this way. With the exception of Ivan Bates and people like that want to really do something, I declare Democrats, and that's including Jimmy Carter, who was a disaster as a president, a bunch of big zeros. And let me tell you what I remember what he did. I don't remember anything good that he did except flip-flop. He gave away our Panama Canal, signed it away that we built. Now the Chinese have it. Look how, that's treason as far as I'm concerned. We built that. That's ours. And now we have to answer to the Chinese.
Yeah.
And the next thing is that the Iran hostage thing, he did zero, nothing.
Yeah.
I got to tell you something. I've never met a Democrat that's ever done anything for me personally, except raise my taxes.
Well, you know
and
what?
If people don't like it, that's tough cookies.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year. Coming up on a break here. But a lot of people have said the same thing. You know, President Trump is talking about getting that Panama Canal back. Did you hear about that? Yeah. Yeah. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the bird flu and the vaccines. There's drug pushers everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's more drug pushers. We'll talk about that when we get back.
Kim Klasick Live starts now on Talk Radio 680, WCBM, and 99.9 FM in Harford County.
All right, good morning. Happy Monday. Yes, it is Monday. I know it feels strange. But happy Monday to you. If you're just joining us, I've got to ask you, where the heck have you been? Great conversations thus far. We're talking about the reduction in homicides. We're talking about the passing of former President Jimmy Carter. I do have a text here. It says, Kim, regarding your question, a retired Baltimore police detective friend of mine seems to think that Mayor Scott might be paying the gangs not to kill people. He said that it would not surprise him at all FYI, this detective is a guy who made felony arrests and truly understands the streets and what is going on. It comes from Harry in Timonium. Harry, yes, I wouldn't be surprised either. And remember, they were talking about doing something similar to that in California a few years ago. But I think there was other people that noted the Safe Streets organization. That's just, to me, that's a way to also pay someone not to be in the streets. Because if those convicted felons weren't at Safe Streets, where would they be? In the streets, back in jail, not all of them, but probably a large percentage of them. We know that our prisons aren't rehabbing anybody, right? Many of them go in, coming out better criminals, to be honest with you. I mean, we're being honest. But Harry, thank you so much for that note, because I think that possibly is the case. Real quick, until, you know, we're going to get to this our bird flu vaccine, but I just wanted to note, there was another American killed by an illegal alien. His name is Jimmy Chang out of Georgia, a real estate realtor, loved by many. And I just wanted to give you this audio really quickly here from Channel 2 there in Georgia. Take a listen.
It's that infectious laugh that family and friends say they'll miss most about Jimmy Chang.
I still can't believe that he's gone.
Jason Chang is Jimmy's oldest brother. He says he's been in shock since he got the call that his baby brother, just 37 years old, died after being hit by a drunk driver in this intersection Sunday morning around 1:30.
I took away everything from us.
This police report says Chang was driving through the intersection on Chambly Tucker when 20-year-old Christian Arias Ruiz ran a red light, going around 100 miles per hour down Buford Highway. Police say the 20-year-old T-boned Chang, causing his car to spin, ejecting and killing him instantly.
Him dying so soon, it's just so not fair.
And as you heard there, 37 years old, Jimmy Chang out of Georgia, and that was his brother talking about him, killed on Christmas Eve. And he was just driving along, and as you heard there, that illegal immigrant going close to what they believe 100 miles per hour. Just continued through the red light and T-boned him and killed him almost immediately. I mean, this isn't the first time that we heard about this with the illegal immigrants in Georgia. Because remember, Lake and Riley, the nursing student. And we heard that that immigrant, that murderer that was here illegally, flew into Georgia from New York City. So I'm wondering, you know, as they begin to untangle the web here of who killed Jimmy Chang, I wonder if this is also going to be a situation where he took a Joe Biden-sponsored flight from New York to Georgia. Because remember, even though people were talking about the buses and everything coming out of Texas and Governor Ron DeSantis, they were talking about that because they wanted to point out that, you know, Republican governors were doing something they didn't like. But remember, Joe Biden, they were flying and busing people around also. They just weren't talking about any of that. So it'll be interesting to see, and I will say January 20th can't come soon enough. Donald Trump said immigration is a privilege, not a right, and that is absolutely true. It is a privilege. It is a privilege for you to be here, okay? The fact that you're here illegally and you weren't thrown in jail immediately, you should thank your lucky stars, because crossing our border is a crime. And in my view, you should be arrested and deported. But, you know, some people look at it as they're just looking for a better way of life. And it could be for some. But since we've gotten so out of control, I don't really care. And you know me, I already said shut it down. Shut the border down. And same we did with Ellis Island. You know, we have a problem. We can't manage that many people coming in. Shut it down. What are you waiting for? Oh, January 20th, please, please hurry. Also, with that, don't forget, the Guardian Angels in New York City did announce this weekend that they'll now be patrolling the New York City subways after all of the crime and violence that we've been seeing on the New York City subways. It makes you wonder, right? Because we weren't seeing all these videos. We weren't talking about the subways while Daniel Penny was standing trial. Did you notice that? I noticed it. And then as soon as he's allowed to go free, which, again, should have never been locked up in the first place. Jordan Neely was out of his mind. He was protecting people. But as soon as he was allowed to go free, now we hear about the New York City subways. Now we're like, oh, wait, there is an illegal immigrant problem on the New York City subways. Oh, they are burning people alive. My bad. Now nobody wants to get involved because they don't want to be the next Daniel Penny. Way to go, Democrats. Way to go. All right. I wanted to talk about the bird flu. And not because I know anybody that has it. Well, because they're now pushing a new bird flu vaccine. And I wonder if this is the new COVID. Well, Dr. Lena Wen, who we're very familiar with here in Baltimore City, she used to be the health director here. She was on Face the Nation over the weekend. Take a listen.
There are two main things that they should be doing in the days that they have left. The first is to get testing out there. I feel like we should have learned our lesson from COVID that just because we aren't testing, it doesn't mean that the virus isn't there. It just means that we aren't looking for it. We should be having rapid tests, home tests available to all farm workers, to their families, for the clinicians taking care of them so that we aren't waiting for public labs and CDC labs to tell us what's bird flu or not. And the second very important thing is this is not like the beginning of COVID where we were dealing with a new virus. We didn't have a vaccine. There actually is a vaccine developed already against H5N1. The Biden administration has contracted with manufacturers to make almost 5 million doses of the vaccine. However, they have not asked the FDA to authorize the vaccine. There's research done on it. They could get this authorized now and also get the vaccine out and to farm workers and to vulnerable people. I think that's the right approach because we don't know what the Trump administration is going to be doing around bird flu. If they have people coming in with anti-vaccine stances, could they hold up vaccine authorization? If they don't want to know how much bird flu is out there, could they withhold testing? I mean, that's a possibility. And I think the Biden administration in the remaining days should get testing and vaccines widely available so that at least it empowers state and local health officials and clinicians to do the right thing for their patients.
Dr. Nguyen, is bird flu in humans super dangerous?
Well, the World Health Organization estimates that in prior outbreaks of the bird flu, that the mortality rate is 52%. 52%. However, in this most recent outbreak, it seems that most cases have been mild, and maybe some people even have asymptomatic infection. But the question is, we don't know what happens when bird flu affects more vulnerable individuals. People infected so far in the U.S. have been mainly farm workers who are working, presumably generally healthy, as opposed to what happens when you get to children, to pregnant women, to older individuals with chronic illnesses. We don't know how deadly, how dangerous bird flu is going to be for those individuals. And again, that's one more reason why we don't want it to spread and acquire more mutations.
Dr. Lita Nguyen, please resign. Please resign. I am so over her. I can't take her any longer. And it's not like just the way, the condescending way that she speaks. It's not just that. It's all over again what we're going through. Okay? She wants to say, and this, she let the mask flip here, by the way. This is the same Dr. Lita Nguyen that admitted after the pandemic that cloth masks and social distancing was just for show. She said that after the pandemic, right? So it was just for show. So now she's saying, who knows if President Trump and his administration will take the bird flu seriously? Who knows if they'll push the vaccines? Where would you even get the idea? Why are you jumping to the conclusion that President Trump could possibly not take it seriously? I'll tell you why. Because Dr. Lita Nguyen is a political hack. This is all politics for her. How could you even make this statement? Did she talk to anybody coming from within Trump's administration? No. No, she's jumping to conclusions. She really is. Because you don't know that. I mean, it was President Trump that got warp speed to us. He got the COVID vaccine to us. Why would you even think or assume that he wouldn't have the bird flu vaccine available? I'll tell you why. Because all you do is you push drugs and big pharma surrounding politics. That is what you do, Dr. Nguyen. And I wish you would resign respectfully. You know what? Disrespectfully. Like I said, I'm not going to be nice till January 1st. It's only December 30th. I don't understand why she's going down this route. And, of course, there are a lot of people that were weighing in online saying that they have no plans to take the bird flu vaccine. She said people could be asymptomatic. The same thing. It's the same thing they said during COVID. She said some people could die. It could be fatal. Some people will be very, very sick. And some people will show no signs at all. This is why they call it practicing medicine. I could have said the same thing about anything, right? Oh, man. Unbelievable. Well, there are a lot of people going off on it. If you want to weigh in, are you planning to take the bird flu vaccine? 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Some people will say, okay, if I have symptoms that are awful and I go and get tested and they find out that I have the bird flu, then maybe possibly I'll take the vaccine. And look, I don't blame you for that, right? I didn't blame anybody for taking the vaccine that had underlying conditions that were older in age. There were some things where you would just say, oh, it makes sense that they took the vaccine. President Trump took the vaccine. He said, look, I'm older. I'm going to take the vaccine. But to force it on individuals, to talk about it as if this might be mandated in the future is crazy. Governor Gavin Newsom, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. He declared a state of emergency for the bird flu. Then we found out there were only 34 documented cases in California. Millions and millions of people live there. Only 34 cases that he said, oh, we got to put in a state of emergency. That just tells you they're trying to do something. They're planning to do something. I don't know who's worse. Is the drug dealers on the streets or the drug dealers in office? Is it drug dealers over at the World Health Organization? Or is it the drug dealers at CDC? Or is it the drug dealers on Middle River and Compass Road? I don't know which ones are worse. You know what? I almost will say those that are at, you know, the World Health Organization. Because the COVID vaccine was mandated on many people. Many, many people. The guys that are selling drugs at the street corner, they're not making us buy their drugs. Just those that want to go buy. I mean, look, Big Pharma, if you're looking at it, could be worse than those that are on the streets dealing. Dr. Lena Wen, please resign immediately. I can't take her anymore. I really can't. And, the things that she said after the fact with the COVID pandemic, after the fact, she said, oh, cloth masks. Yes, we know they weren't going to work. Well, why did you have every single kid sitting in class with a cloth mask on if you knew that they needed an N95 to even be protected? Why did you do that, Dr. Lena Wen? These are the questions. Face the Nation, CNN, MSNBC, they won't ask her these questions. I would love to ask her these questions. As soon as you saw that it wasn't really affecting kids and they weren't even really carrying it home as they told us that they were going to do, they were going to carry it back to their elderly relatives, that didn't happen either, did it? I have so many questions for her. Ugh. Speaking of taking something, Ozempic, real quick. Did you hear about this? 37% of Gen Z is planning to use Ozempic, the weight loss drug. We talked about Ozempic last week and how everybody turns to a pill for everything. And I couldn't believe it. 37% Gen Z planning to use Ozempic. Of course, they're talking about it on these different podcasts. There's a podcast called His and Her. And according to a survey administered by Tebra, that's how they got these numbers. And it turned out that 1 in 4 Americans are discussing taking Ozempic because they want to lose weight quickly. Take a listen to what they were saying on the podcast.
Well, now just people will just be like, Ozempic, what is your energy on that?
Oh, boy. I'll start with this. Up until now, my strong opinion is we are in the beginning of the most effective medical intervention for obesity that we've ever seen in our lives. This is going to completely revolutionize and change pharmaceutical industry. That's how powerful these peptides are. That being said, okay, it's not a panacea. So here's what they do. And I'm not going to get into the science, but let's talk about why people lose weight on them. You eat less. It crushes your appetite. For somebody who's really struggling with severe obesity, I could see this as being profoundly beneficial in combination with good coaching on changing behavior so that this is something that sticks. Because once you go off, then your appetite will probably go back to where it was before. So if you work with somebody with a GLP-1 through modifying behaviors, that's where we could probably use it. Massive potential for abuse. That's the fear.
All right. So if you're thinking about the bird flu vaccine, you know who I think is going to get the bird flu vaccine? That 37% of Gen Zers. They said they're going to use Ozempic because they want to see weight loss fast instead of just taking their butts to the gym. When did we get so lazy? When did this occur? Look, I want to lose weight too. All right? I want to enjoy my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day, but I can't. Because I know that I would get extremely large if I were just eating bagels with cream cheese, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I love it, but I can't eat it. I also have to go work out. I've noticed increasingly the younger generation, and this is, look, if you're part of the younger generation, this is no slight to you because you might be a hard worker, but there is a large part of your population that just wants this instant gratification. And I think it might be surrounding social media and all the things that we see today, but it's like, look, you can go to the gym and have great results. Okay. And I will note those that take Ozempic, some people really do need it. Some people are obese. They're right there on the cusp. They're having health problems, those that have diabetes. But if you are an able-bodied American and you can go to the gym and change your lifestyle, go out for a run every day, I suggest doing that. I also noted, you know, right now, kids that are turning 16, less and less of them are going to get their driver's license. I was there on my 16th birthday. I was like, Dad, no, we're getting up. We got to go. I'm 16. I'm getting my driver's license. Kids aren't like that anymore. It's like they're not hungry as they used to be. Bizarre, bizarre. If you want to weigh in on this, 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. At 11:35, we will talk about this huge debate, and that is whether or not we should reform some of these visa programs. We'll talk about that coming up next. All right. Good morning. Yes, it's Monday. Yes, many people are putting down, they're jotting down their notes on what they plan to do as far as their New Year's resolution. Hopefully you guys are making some plans and putting at least one goal in place. That'd be nice, right? Well, how did we start this tradition? I guess, you know, I should look at the history of it. But as I noted before, mine is to be a little bit nicer, take exercise a lot more seriously, and spend more time with my daughter. That's a personal one for me. You know, running for office, you don't really, it's tough. So spending more time with Olivia would be great. But hopefully you guys are jotting down some notes as well. We did talk about the bird flu vaccine. I got a text here from Gino in Forest Hill. He says, Kim, I was never masked, never vaccinated, never socially distanced, never got the China virus. And I'm not falling for this time either. I did wear sterilized gloves, however. Legalized ivermectin, not marijuana. Yeah, you know, Gino, I think a lot of people feel the same way. You know, we're not falling for it again. And when I say again, many of us didn't fall for it the first time, I mean, if we're being honest. But there were lots of people that did, in fact, fall for it. And I told you, even people in my own family, and I just looked at them just in shock because it was bizarre, some of the things they were saying. Saying, wait a minute, you think, wait, what? How many people do you think are going to die in Maryland? Are you, what? Are you high? Like, what? Like, this is the most bizarre stuff. I was like, wait a minute. There's no way you could possibly believe this. And they were like, well, that's what Governor Larry Hogan said. Oh, yes, Governor Larry Hogan. You know him personally? Tells you the truth all the time? No, no. I mean, have you been paying attention? This is politics, sweetheart. This is how it works. And we were also talking about the fact that there was a survey that went out by Tebra. And they found out 37% of Gen Zers are planning to use Ozempic. And I think it's because a lot of them are lazy. I don't know if COVID contributed to that, right? Being locked down during the pandemic. You know what I thought would might have happened with all the kids that were locked down? I thought we were going to come back with like a bunch of really amazing athletes and people in better shape because like they were at home. So they, a lot of them had time to work out, whether it was going for runs in their neighborhood or what have you. That didn't happen. There were a lot of people that just sat home and played video games. That didn't happen. I guess we didn't learn a whole lot from COVID. We didn't learn a whole lot. But like I said before the break, I know a lot of those kids today, in the next generation here, they're not running to, you know, I guess it's called the MVA now. It used to be called the DMV, right? But they're not running to get their driver's license like they used to. There's a lot of kids not running to get their permits and practicing so that they could drive, you know, like I wanted to on my 16th birthday. It's just, you could see the kids are just not as hungry as they once were. And I don't know if COVID contributes to that. I don't really know. You know, possibly social media. You know, maybe we've lowered the expectations a bit. But there are a lot of kids that just aren't hungry. This is kind of what I tell my daughter. If you just show up on time, you present yourself well, you speak well, and, you know, you look like you take the initiative, you go to take the initiative. If you just do, like, the basics, I mean, you could climb the corporate ladder quickly. There's so many lazy people in the corporate world today. It's unbelievable. It's kind of like the government worker jobs, right? I mean, they just promote them just to promote them. But it's like, if you showed initiative and you did really well, you would succeed. You will succeed. Well, on that note, there's a huge, huge debate on X, formerly known as Twitter. Elon Musk is caught up in it. Vivek Ramaswamy is caught up in it. And they're basically saying that the workforce and those that they pull from out of, you know, those that are entering the workforce, you know, they're just not as qualified as they once were. I do have a text here from him. And Ham says the H-1B visa argument is not against the best and the brightest. It's the fact that Trump is not even in office yet to build the wall and deport criminals and hopefully cause self-deportation of the rest of the illegals. And yet Elon and Vivek want to increase the H-1B visas. The timing stinks. The American people have yet to heal from the black eye of the Biden administration gave us from. And Elon, Vivek, and Trump, squirting vinegar in that same eye. Trump should focus on border security, deportations, and get the economy rocking. And then in 2 years, let's talk about if we need to increase H-1B visas. They need to be smarter than this. Again, that was Ham. Yeah, you know, I understand that point of it. But I also saw people taking it even further, and maybe you weren't Ham, but there are people in the conservative influencer world, which I'm not a fan of many of those people, but they were saying that they should hire from within regardless if they want to put America first. And then some people were saying, well, if you think America should be first, you could get the best and brightest here in America. All right, I want you to weigh in on this conversation. We'll discuss more of this when we get back. Jolene, I like this song. Dolly Parton, National Treasure.
Jolene.
All right, we're talking about Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy. So this, my producer does speak every once in a while. He told me that I should remind you guys that I will be here on New Year's Day. I'll be here tomorrow as well. I didn't take any days off. No days off. None. You know, some of us got to stay hungry out here. Now, my show is only 9 and 12, right? I mean, look, if I'm going to go do something, I can do it after noon. There's no reason for me to really take off. I'll be here with you. So please tune in. Again, I know that you have options, and I appreciate you guys tuning in to WCBM 680, especially during the midday. Hopefully, we have topics that you want to weigh in on. One of those being the topic we're going to discuss right now, and that is the H-1B visa program. All right. Elon Musk calls for major reform and proposes to make it more expensive to hire overseas than domestically. Now, he put this statement out after days, I tell you, days of fighting and going back and forth online with Republicans. And it's very interesting because one notably, and I think Barbara called in last week on Friday to talk about it, Laura Loomer, who was traveling with President Trump and his administration during the election cycle. And then, you know, some people said that she was just a little extreme, a little off the rocker, and they wanted her off the flight or off the, Trump Force One, I think is what they call it. And they then gave her the boot. And I recall that a lot of people thought that she's the one that told Trump to say during the debate that they're eating the cats and dogs in Ohio, the Haitian immigrants. So they were like, all right, get her out of there. This sounds loony. Now, is there any confirmation she said that? No, there's no confirmation, but it's a pretty good guess. Well, anyways, Laura Loomer was going back and forth with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and saying, look, whoa. Kind of like our texter here, Ham, who says the timing is off here. We're talking about closing the borders. We're talking about putting America first. Why are you talking about the H-1B visa program and how we should be recruiting the best and the brightest no matter where they are from? I get that part of it. Now, I didn't weigh in on this argument because I thought both sides were making great points. But I also thought this is one of those arguments where here we have people just dragging one another. We just won bigly, right? The White House, the Senate, the House. And I'm thinking, you know, not that we need to be celebrating, but I thought, okay, let's make sure we have our priorities in order. I love the fact that Tom Homan has really just kind of jumped into action. I love the fact that President Trump has jumped into action, especially when it comes to foreign policy and what's been going on in Ukraine. I mean, he's ready. He's ready to go. I thought maybe we should be focusing on stuff like that, but this was a huge focus. And meanwhile, Democrats, liberals on X were laughing at Republicans saying, oh, look, MAGA's in a huge fight with one another. And you know what? I don't blame them for laughing. A lot of it did look really ridiculous. It ended with Laura Loomer and many people having their account on X, I guess you could say censored. So right now, according to Laura Loomer, she can no longer monetize her account. And so and that goes for other people that were basically questioning Elon Musk and Vivek about what they want to do with H-1B visas. I think that's wrong, and I think a lot of people think that's wrong, because Elon Musk, he purchased X saying that he wasn't going to censor anybody. Free speech for all. And then he does that. Now, can you say, okay, she still has her account, she just can't monetize it? I mean, it's a bad look. It really is. But I guess my whole thing is, why was Elon and Vivek getting all caught up in this to begin with? You're telling us that you're coming in and you're doing the Department of Government Efficiency. So we're like, shouldn't you be focused on spending less money here in the U.S.? That's what I believe their focus was. And then it took this, what some people call a gnarly turn, into talking about the visa program. Now, I will note, Vivek Ramaswamy, even though people were saying that he was born somewhere else, he was born here in America. That is how he was in the presidential race. I thought that was weird. No, it was weird. Some people were telling him to go back to where he came from. I'm like, wait a minute, what? You mean Ohio? I thought that was strange. But I thought the whole conversation was strange. And that's why I didn't even get into it with people. And I saw people going back and forth, like I said, for days on this. And now there's some people that aren't friends anymore over it. Yeah, it's important, but I didn't think it was that important, where we would have to literally curse one another out. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong on this. I want to get your take. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. Do you believe there should be some reform to the H-1B visa program? Do you think that we hire way too much from overseas? Now, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, they said that when it comes to the tech world, when it comes to STEM, when it comes to engineering, they said the best and the brightest aren't here in America. They said because of our school system and what we've been focusing on in the past 10 years, they're saying the best and the brightest live elsewhere. Whereas, like our texter Ham noted, this is a wrong time to have that conversation. The border is still wide open. All right. I want to get your take on it. I've got Joe in Baltimore. Joe, how do you feel about all this?
Morning, Kim.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. Thank you for asking. You said a lot of things that I didn't expect you to say. So, nice. Okay. But, yeah, I think that it's a huge slap in the face to the American people for Elon, first of all, who's an immigrant. To sit here and say that the best and brightest are not here in America, but then at the same time want to cut funding for educational programs and doesn't want to spend any of his $400 billion, his vast wealth that he earned here. He earned here. And a lot of that wealth, let me be honest, Kim, I used to like Elon a lot. That was my guy. I was a fan. But then I had to learn that Elon really didn't invent anything. Tesla already existed, okay? He just became a co-founder, right, through a legal process. SpaceX already existed. All of these companies that he gets credit for, they already were there. He hasn't done anything. He knows how to make phone calls and raise money. He appears to be a genius, but he's not really the person behind all of these great ideas and inventions. But yet he wants to say that America does not have the talent. In actuality, what it is he doesn't want to pay Americans the money that they deserve to do those jobs. He wants to bring in immigrants and pay them less and make them work crazy hours, because that's what all the people at Tesla and SpaceX say. We work a crazy amount of hours and don't get paid. That's the same pitch for Doge. Hey, do you want to work for free? That's his pitch. That's what he wants. That's what this is all about.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Let's talk about this. When it comes to, I guess, our education system, I know you noted that they do want to cut funding, which I saw that, and I actually agree with, because I look at Baltimore City and all the money that's coming in, and a lot of it's just mismanaged. It's not like, you know, they're cutting funding that's going to the kids in the first place. Do you believe that cutting the funding will make things worse, I guess, for kids here in the American education system?
I mean, I do. I think if you're cutting funding for the sake of cutting funding, and then you're not coming up with alternatives to how to use those funds, like you said, they're mismanaged, then yes, I think it's ridiculous. He's talking about cutting $2 trillion. First off, that's completely unrealistic. He's not going to do that. He makes false promises, just like all the other projects he's talking about, false promises. There's no way you're going to cut that much money. And if you're going to cut money, if you're going to cut from education, then have a solution to how we could use it better. It's the Department of Efficiency. It's not just Department of Cuts. right? How can we use that money better to train the people here in America? And personally, this is my opinion, I think all that money you got, $400 billion, you could open the most incredible engineering program, the most incredible engineering school. You could literally build a college from the bottom up, and it would be the best college in the world for engineers, and you could literally filter them right into your company. But you don't want to do that. Because you don't want to spend any money. I'm tired of companies and these people with all this money not spending the money on training people, expecting them to come in having all of this experience, and you don't want to put the money into us. That, to me, is wrong.
Well, Joe, that's a great point. I mean, he could have a spectacular engineering school that offers those programs that he talks about and make sure that, he could even bring some of those immigrants over to teach at some of those schools. To make sure that Americans did have that education. I will agree with you on that one. Thank you so much for calling in, Joe. I hope you have a happy new year.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a good point. That's a great point. And I was noticing the fighting going back and forth. If you want to weigh in on this, you can. 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. The back and forth that I saw, and I don't know how my algorithms work. Is it, did I just see those people that I follow? Did I just see what they were saying the most of, like Laura Loomer and others? That's a possibility. But I didn't see anybody say to Elon, why not make sure that Americans have that kind of education so that we will be up to par. I will say this is an article in the Gateway Pundit if you want to take a look at it. It says, as of September 30th, 2019, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services estimated that approximately 583,000 individuals were authorized to work in the United States under the H-1B visa classification. Each fiscal year, there is a congressionally mandated cap of 65,000 on H-1B visas, with an additional 20,000 visas available for individuals holding a master's degree or higher from a U.S. institution, which is, of course, totaling 85,000 new H-1B visas annually. I see why Musk is pushing it. It does say how Musk, an immigrant himself, as Joe pointed out, benefited from the H-1B program, acknowledges it's a role in attracting top-tier talent to the United States. But as people are pointing out, either you're America first or you're not. And if you believe that hiring the best and the brightest in other countries before trying to make sure that Americans are not put in that position, that's a tough sell. It's a tough sell, and the timing is off. And again, I don't think this is a conversation for them to take on. You're over at Doge. You're over at Doge. Why are you taking this on? Why? Because it's close to home. It's close to the vest. He benefited from that program. I'm sure Vivek Ramaswamy has many people in his family or friends that benefited from that program, and that's why he supports it. But again, even Vivek Ramaswamy, he was on X calling for the end of affirmative action, but he wants more H-1B visas. It's a tough play. It's a tough play. I can see why people were upset. I really can. Elon Musk previously wrote, the reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that made America strong, is because of H-1B visas. He also added, take a big step back and F yourself in the face. He actually said the real F word. I will go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend. I don't think people saw that coming from Elon Musk, did you? I don't think so. This is why many people were upset. So he says that, and then I saw where Laura Loomer was like, oh, heck no. And, she backs down from absolutely no one. Now, I also, again, I disagree with the fact that he demonetized her account because she decided to call him out. And that's when Elon Musk made a clarification. After facing the backlash, he commented, he said, maybe this is a helpful clarification. I'm referring to bringing in via legal immigration the top 0.1% of engineering talent as being essential for America to keep winning. He then says this is like bringing in the Wembys of the world to help your whole team win the NBA. Thinking of America as a pro sports team that has been winning for a long time and wants to keep winning is the right mental construct. If you can imagine, many people were very upset. Many people. But then, of course, there were other people, as I mentioned earlier, that said, hey, if we either we're for DEI or we're not for DEI, do you want the best and brightest, or you're only going to choose here in America because, you know, America first? Or do we absolutely want the best and the brightest? Look, this conversation, it circled back and forth, like I said, for at least 4 days. And then after that, Elon Musk says, easily fixed by raising the minimum salary significantly and adding a yearly cost of maintaining the H-1B, making it materially more expensive to hire from overseas than domestically. He says, I've been very clear that the program is broken and needs major reform. This goes back to our caller, Joe, that pointed out, Elon Musk is worth $400 billion. You can raise the minimum wage or the minimum salary requirement for those coming in on the H-1B visa. So a man that's worth $400 billion, he doesn't care. He could care less. A lot of these tech companies that are making a ton of money, even getting some of these government grants, why would they care if you raise the minimum salary or bringing people over here? They wouldn't care. So I think, you know, what he's saying as far as that reform, I think that was him kind of just, you know, offering peanuts to the conversation. I think that was kind of like, you know, I want people off my neck, so I'll just say let's raise it for people to come over. It's a tough combo. It is. And like I said before, I see points on both sides. But as Ham pointed out in the text line, it's a bad time to talk about this before we even close the border. It's a bad time to talk about legal immigration because, as I mentioned here on this show plenty of times, I say shut it all down, legal and illegal, until we get back on our feet and get a good understanding on who's in this country and who needs to leave. Now, I know some people don't agree with that. I mean, look, President Trump's talking about ending the birthright citizenship program. Same here. Do it. This all leads to more people coming over here illegally. So if we have to shut it down, shut it down. Now, again, this is a back and forth. Vivek Ramaswamy, he was the one saying shut the border down, even with legal immigration. He said that when he was running for president many months ago. Is he going back on that with this recent conversation? It's a head scratcher. I got my friend Sophia in Perry Hall. Sophia, you wanted to weigh in?
Hi, yeah. I just read from Stephen Moore. His Unleashed Prosperity hotline, it said, the nonpartisan American Immigration Council found in their 2024 report that this year the percentage of new American companies has reached a new high. 46% of Fortune 500 companies in 2024 were founded by immigrants or the children of immigrants. So I am all for the visa program if, in fact, you can make it the best of the best and not the most of the most.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Sophia. That's a great way to put it. Because if they are creating jobs, I don't think anybody would be against that, right?
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
These are high-paying jobs. I think at Tesla, even over there at X right now, from my understanding, many of those people are making at least six figures.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, they're making their mark, and those are the people that we need. They're the makers, not the takers.
Yeah. Yeah. Sophia, thank you so much. I hope you have a happy new year.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. And, yeah, I mean, look, like I said, there's great arguments on both sides. I think I have to go back to and agree with my texter and say, you know, Ham, you're right. The timing on this is horrendous. I wish I could go back and see how this conversation started to begin with. That was the part that was confusing. And even when I was reading it through the Gateway Pundit and other news organizations, it never said how this initially started. It just said, here's the debate. Here is, the key influential people that are having this debate. And here's what Vivek and others are saying about it. And it never showed, like, who sparked all of this. I would like to know. Because if it was somebody talking about whether it was talking about, you know, having immigrants coming over legally, even though we're trying to get a handle of our illegal situation, if Vivek and Elon Musk said, oh, well, no, we shouldn't shut it down at all, then that flies in the face, I think, of what many people in the Trump administration have been saying this entire time. Because they have been saying shut it down, as I told you before, as similar to Ellis Island, until we figure this all out. There's so many backlogs right now with the immigration judges, those that are seeking asylum. It's out of control. immigration judges already said they can't get a handle on it. Shut it all down. Shut it all down. Let's get a handle on it and then talk about legal immigration. I don't think it'll take that much time as fast as Tom Homan is moving. All right, we'll discuss more when we get back. All right. I think we had a pretty good show today. Yeah, of course, of course. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of news because obviously people are still enjoying the holidays. If you want to weigh in on that conversation when it comes to Elon Musk, the H-1B visas and all that great stuff, again, just go over to Twitter. They're still fighting about it today. my friend Madison Justiato, she said, similarly to what Sophia, our caller, just said, she says, simple breakdown, we want to protect the American worker, compete in the global economy, and bring some of the world's best talent, like Elon Musk, to join us. And I think that's correct, right? You bring the best and the brightest. You don't just bring everybody over. And I don't even know how this conversation started, but obviously it got to a point where Elon Musk and Vivek put their feet in their mouth. And so that's where they are. That is where they are. After all that, then Elon Musk took to Twitter yesterday telling everybody that maybe we should just calm down and be nice to one another. If you can imagine, a lot of people were not happy that he said that. And so people are like, oh, so you want to end the conversation because you said something ridiculously stupid that President Trump won't even go along with. And now you want to end the conversation. Here's the thing that I've noticed. Those that talk a lot, especially like on Twitter or whatever, they usually end up putting their foot in their mouth at some point in time. And then they're backtracking and they're trying to take on the backlash. And a lot of times it could be just avoided if you just didn't tweet out anything that popped into your head. That's the advice I would give to those that are on X or Twitter. Yeah, every once in a while something does grate my nerves and I'll post about it. Obviously, I post about the show. I now post clips from the show. So hopefully, you know, more people will listen in and say, oh, you know what? That's a pretty good show. She doesn't talk just about Baltimore region. She talks about, you know, national politics. Great. You know, you can stream it live. We're on Spotify, Amazon Echo. Tune in. Yeah, tune in. You know, but for the most part, from what I noticed is that there are people that will tweet all day long. And you wonder if they even have a day job. And Elon Musk is one of those people. He's tweeting constantly. At some point in time, you're going to say something that is going to upset other individuals. And hopefully he thinks about what people have said to him in regards to reform that might need to happen with this program. And hopefully he has this discussion with President Trump, because I'll tell you right now, President Trump, from what I could tell, has not weighed in on this yet. Nothing on Truth Social. And I would think that he doesn't want to deal with this right now. Which is why, again, I don't know why we're having this conversation. Joseph in the text line says, Cam, people have no idea what it's like to be on Ozempic. It kills the flow of dopamine. You lose interest in food and drinks because you can't enjoy them anymore. This includes coffee and alcohol. I take it for diabetes. I wish I didn't have to. Joseph, yeah, we were talking earlier about how kids, 37% of Gen Zers say they're going to take Ozempic this year, 2025, that is, because they want to lose fat quickly. And I said, first of all, I said, leave Ozempic to those that have diabetes, like our friend Joseph here. And secondly, you can get up and at least try to lose the weight just because you want instant gratification. There's other things you can do. How about this? This novel idea. How about you burn more calories than you take in? I know it sounds crazy. I'm an innovator. that might be a thing. Look, I want all the great foods as well. But you know what I'm sitting here eating? Granola bars. That's what I'm eating right now. Oh, well, and not everybody's the same. I get it. All right. Tomorrow, we will be right back here at 9 a.m. to 12 noon. I hope that you do join me. And again, I know that you have options. So thank you for joining us. Brian, as always, thank you for a great show. I will talk to all of you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.